Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. Well, I think it's always a good sign when the music starts because we had a couple of days this week when it didn't. And so when we got to, I think Jean's having computer issues in the great frozen wasteland up north where she is. And so it's Friday. It's Friday before New Year's. This is New Year's. New Year's Eve is tonight. I got a gig. You know, my band Starfish is playing at a local VFW. And so we're going to rock the VFW. And it should be kind of fun. So we'll do our bit for the veterans. And just because they were nice enough to ask us to play. So we're kind of a new band. We've only done one gig at the Gulf Coast Garage here in the beautiful paradise known as Milton, Florida, on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. So, again, I talk about this all the time, but you have to have an outlet. You can't do politics all day long. You go nuts. And so as much as I love it, as love is, to me, it's like a sport, you know, so all those athletes, professional athletes, I guess I'm a professional political athlete, probably what you could say, you know, competing with my brain against people play along. But for me, even then, it's still nice to just rock out and not talk politics. And so that's what I'll be doing tonight for New Year's. And of course, I have my New Year's resolutions is to turn Action Radio into a revolution. Peaceful, calm, very deliberate, but a revolution nonetheless. And so we shall see how that goes. So Gene, I don't think we have any of our regular callers. I sent a message to Alan down in Belize saying, hey, dude, you want to call in? Feel free. I don't think anybody else, you know, I'm not sure if anybody else is. All our regular gun folks and Derek, our economics person, I think they're all off, you know, getting ready for New Year's. So this might be a really short show today. just depends on what, you know, when we're done, we're done.
Good morning.
How are you doing, Gene?
Yeah.
Good morning.
I'm doing all right. Happy New Year to everybody. A little early.
This whole week is like a week off for most people. They'll pick up our podcast next week. That's what I'm thinking. Although actually we've got a pretty good response this week, so it looks like people are listening. Yeah.
Oh, good.
You want to say something?
Yeah. No. I'm one that is looking forward to 2021 being behind me. Yeah.
Well, I don't know. I had a good year, you know, maybe because adversity sometimes, you know, spurs me on to more things because as a reactive force here, as well as a proactive force, you know, whether stuff happens, you know, we can react to or we cause stuff to happen or it doesn't, either way that we've got stuff to do. It's like the stock market. You can make money on the way up. You can make money on the way down. With politics, we can have an impact on the way up, and we can have an impact on the way down. And right now, it's on the way down with the whole Brandon insurrection.
Yeah, well,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm not saying anything about my year, but I'm going to spend a lot of time tomorrow, and I things need to change for me. And
okay,
because you know you can look at sustainability, and hard to see that when for me it was what I'm doing, and so. But it's a good thing because it's like we have to shed layers.
Change is good, Gene. Change is good.
It is. It is. Yeah. It is. And, you know, I know that as a life coach, but I have to really look at things because, I have to, yeah.
No, I understand. And share what you want to share. And if you want to sort of let us in on this journey, then feel free. I mean, I let people in. I'm probably way too much in my own life. I think it gives meaning and perspective that, you know, nothing's 100%. Nobody's 100% good. Nothing works 100% of the time. Well, we know from our technology. Somehow we muddle through and we make progress and we, you know, go a few steps forward and a couple steps back and we take a few more steps forward. And it's very much haphazard and random and, you know, events come in, you know, the things you have to deal with all the time. I forgot what I was dealing with yesterday, something stupid. It took like about an hour and a half of my time. So why did an hour and a half on that? Well, I had to because it was some stupid thing that came up. You know, so stupid stuff. And all these things happen. But it sounds like you're about to go through a big change. And so I'm really excited.
Right.
And like I say, feel free to let us in on the journey because other folks might be either starting it in the middle of it or have already gone through it and go, yeah, I know what that is. So you don't know.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, it's not that what I'm going through is bad. It's just that, you know, I need to, there's things I need to focus on and I need to look at, you know, how time is spent and just reevaluate things. You know, it's like this, what's going on in the politics especially recently, which is, and nothing, it's not as though it's worse, you know, but it just got me, it's almost like I need to take a break from politics. And that's why I feel that it's got me in, into where I'm at right now, is I wanted to get into politics because of where it's at, but yet it's like, I feel like my energy and effort could be used elsewhere, and I just need to decide that.
Well, makes sense. Yeah, and just let me know. You know, like I say, wherever your journey takes you, even if it takes you, you know, wherever. Like I say, I'd be very curious to see what's going on. The thing about politics, though, the way that the best thing about politics is don't become absolutely invested in it. You know, so much that it's like a job. It's like, and you try, you do your job, but you don't want to take it home with you all the time. You know, and it's good to have other things. Like I say, I play guitar, you know, most nights. After I watch my news and get my show ready, simply because it's the outlet. It's what takes me away. And, you know, I do a lot of Facebook stuff with friends. I mean, I'm you know, messing all kinds of people, many of whom are international. And so there's a huge network that I have. And so that's what carries me through is my network, you know, my friends, my my passion for action radio. And stuff that I don't do with action radio. Go hit the gym, get physical. I'm looking into, you know, a new sport for myself, and whether it's like, you know, European rapier and dagger, or maybe a martial art or something like that. But there's always things you want to, you know, diversity. Diversity in your activities makes a big difference. And so if politics is dragging you down, you know, there's all kinds of other stuff going on out there. I mean, obviously, we do a lot of politics at Action Radio, but a lot of it also is very internal centered. You know, people writing bills, where a lot of it's creativity. Yes, we write bills around politics. Yes, we do things around legislation. But we're not, when I think of politics, I think of like the game players, like the people, the campaign consultants, the people that, and you can watch various movies on this. I forgot, there was one with, who's that actor? I can't think of his name. Anyway, but he was a political consultant, and then he rose up in the politics and became a candidate and all that kind of stuff. But there's so much to it. The people that are, they're invested, their entire lives are invested in it. And they live, sleep, eat, and breathe politics. And I don't, you know, but because so much of what goes on here is creative. It's much more of an internal kind of thing. It's much more of a, you know, where do you want to go, you know, that isn't being done. So I think politics is mostly reactive. And I think so much of what we do here is proactive by creating. And so that's it. That's how I look at it. So maybe it's a little bit different.
Right.
But we'll see. Yeah.
And I think, yes, you bring up the good people that are trying to come up with New Year's, you know, things to do into the New Year's too, that you want to just what you want to strive for. I think, yeah, being well-rounded is a good thing. Don't, you know, because if you don't take care of yourself, you're no good to anybody else. So if you don't take care of the spiritual, the mental, the physical, yeah, and it doesn't have to be these big elaborate things. Even just walk a few minutes, 10, 15 minutes a day, get out in nature. That's a big thing. It can help uplift your spirit. You know, if your job isn't going for you, okay, think about something else. What can you do? And for some people, it would be an easy avenue to bridge into something else. And other people, it may take a little bit more time. But, you know, we don't have to stay where we're at. And so, and it doesn't have to be these big things to give up for New Year's or strive for. It may be even just meditating 5 minutes a day.
Yeah, I want to talk to you about that because I've tried, and I either go to sleep or get bored. It's one or the other. I sit there like waiting for something to happen and nothing does, or I just fall asleep. So I don't know how the meditation thing works. It doesn't seem to work for me, though, but that's something that I think maybe you and Chansey can hash out one day and you can help me out. But if you'll notice, the way that Action Radio is structured, and this is a good time for us to talk about this being the end of the year, you will notice that we have everything from national security to wine, weed, and wellness. We have cruise and travel. We have economics. We have guns. We have legal stuff. We have you know, medical reports. People that are, you know, doing the, you know, Cindy who does is fighting for medical freedom. Yeah, that's political, but it's also it has a lot to do with health. I mean, we spend a lot of time on the COVID stuff, as much from the health aspect as the political aspect. You know, we have many different things. David who does Santa Rosa Volunteers. You know, people that are coordinating and getting involved. Yeah, that's political, but it's also people, you know, expressing themselves and taking action and feeling good about doing something as opposed to not doing something. And so there are many different areas, but Tuesday especially, we're kind of off the wall on Tuesdays with a bunch of different things. You know, Josie does a Latino report. And so the reason that we have, and there are 20 groups associated with Action Radio. We have art, environment, We have the Oh My God page. We have legal. We have homeschool. We have family law. We have just a ton of different things in our 20 groups, some of which aren't that active. We have your group, the Life Coach page, which we definitely need to work on as well. And so, you know, we are, you know, I hate to use the word, but it sort of fits. We are as diverse, I think, as any show in the areas that we cover, in the spirituality, in the art, in the health, in alternative health, in all kinds of things. And so the reason that that's there, that's on purpose. That's because, you know, life is supposed to be well-rounded. And so, yes, we dive into politics, but we dive into everything. I mean, I you know, we had the Creek Tribe report. I mean, how many shows in the country, in fact, I'm trying to get Chief Dan back, but Chief Dan Skyhorse of the Santa Rosa Creek Tribe was on every week. How many people have a, you know, a Native American, American Indian report? They don't do it, you know, because they're all, you look at the, you know, let's pick on Sebastian Gorka, because that's always fun. He's a big guy. He can handle it. But you listen to his show, it's his friends. He calls his Washington buddies. He has like the 10 or so reporters that he calls every week, you know, and they basically say the same stuff they've been saying since the show started. And he's got 6 million listeners. So obviously that's advertising and marketing, because I think we do a better show. We certainly have a lot more reporters, uncover a lot more topics, and cover just tons more stuff. So what's holding us back is not the quality of our show, because I think our show is I put our show against any show in the country right now. The difference is in the marketing budget that we don't have. The difference is in the fact that we're doing something new and creative, which is why I found that article by Fred Jacobs so fascinating. Let's get into that now. I don't know if you had a chance to read it or not. It's a big article. I wasn't planning to do this first. I was going to plan to do my UMass thing first, but let's get into this. Let's get into what's happening right now with radio. Did you get a chance to take a look at this one? Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Okay. What'd you think? I'm just curious.
Just interesting. Yeah.
Okay. Let me let me tell people tell everybody a story to get you all caught up. So Fred Jacobs is the one that invented the classic rock format for radio. Okay, this guy is a Hall of Fame media consultant. And about 2 years ago, he wrote an article which I found purely by accident, just you know doing internet search stuff, and it was talking about how radio needs a brainstorm, how there are no new ideas in radio. And this is true. In fact, I've seen several articles on this over the last several years that radio's dying, that it's boring, and nothing new is happening. When the reason nothing is happening is because the powers that be don't want anything to happen. You know, I mean, I was fired from a radio station, you know, for trying to do something different. And so there's this huge resistance to anything that isn't, you know, especially for AM radio, 1960s drive time. Which is when people hopped in their Chevy Impala with the big 357 V8, yeah, or 350, whatever it was, 350 Cleveland engine, right? Getting about 8 miles to the gallon, and they sit, you know, they commute like 20 minutes to work on the freeway. Back when there's a lot fewer people, a lot closer jobs, and the freeways weren't as crowded, and so they have these 20-minute cycles where you get news, weather, and sports. Well, the AM radio was the only game in town. There were no cell phones, there was no internet. You know, you had your three network channels for news, or you had the radio news. And so AM radio, when since radio came in the cars, that was your morning news program. So as the men went to work, you know, they would listen to the news, weather, and sports, because, you know, guys like news, weather, and sports. I guess, I don't know, we're watching I Love Lucy, you know, back home. So the real stereotypical kind of conversation here. But that's where radio is mentally today. A lot of it. A lot of the AM people are still in that 1960s, 20-minute commute, you know, news, weather, and sports thing. But you get your news from any number of sources. You get your weather by, you know, your cell phone. I mean, cell phone supplies everything that these news reports do. And a lot of times the news reports are late compared to what you can get on your cell phone. As for traffic, you get a traffic map right on your cell phone. You know exactly where the problems are. So you don't need somebody to announce, you know, different places that you're trying to visualize anyway. And so radio's old. And the biggest problem with radio is that it's old by design, that they're not trying to think of anything new. And so Fred Jacobs, you know, who invented classic rock and, like I say, a Hall of Fame VO consultant, wrote an article and said, we need to have a brainstorm for new ideas. Well, of course, you know me. I immediately commented, dear Fred, it's already been done. There already is a new idea. It's called Action Radio, the first merging of an internet radio show with a citizen legislature that actually writes bills to solve the problems we investigate on the show. This is still, as far as I can tell, the newest, most creative, most inventive idea in radio today. nobody even comes close. Everybody else is following the old formats because the bosses, the chief folks, you know, behind the scenes, the program directors, the owners, that's the way they want it. You look at Talkers Magazine, the Bible of talk radio, which I've approached several times, as, hey, guys, you want to talk about innovation? Here's an innovation. Here's a new genre. Here's an entirely new kind of radio that's never been done before. Have they done a story on us? Well, no. Why? Because we're too new and too different. That's going to change one day. Anyway, so Fred writes an article. This is dated December 24th, so this was last week. He says, if radio won't reinvent itself, maybe someone else will. So, you know me. I immediately commented, dear Fred, remember us? Because he's been watching us for a couple of years now. And so let me just, before I get to the article, I'll tell you what I wrote, and then I'll tell you what Fred responded, because it's really kind of nice. Scroll. I think we're still the last comment. Yeah, I said, talk radio has already been reinvented. I'm the creator and host of the Action Radio Citizen Legislature. We are the world's first internet radio show writing and submitting citizen legislation to all levels of government. Okay, it's basically what I just said, all right? And we have press release, 25 citizen-written bills to Rock 2022. Then I explain how it works, writeyourlaws.com, yada, 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 all those things that everybody knows. Then I left one of our bills, the bill that rewrites Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act, and I said, the future of talk radio is action radio. It's here and it works. We have a system where anyone with a good enough idea could get a bill on the desk of the president. That's reinventing radio. Y'all are welcome on the show, and the call-in number I gave, 215-383-3832. That's for anybody who's listening right now, too. You guys can call in. Broadcasts are 6 to 9 a.m. Central Time weekdays. So then he writes back. It's very sharp. It's really nice. You know, here's, like I say, Hall of Fame, world-renowned media consultant says, Greg, thanks for chiming in. I know you've been at this for a long time. I appreciate you sharing it. So he knows. It's like he knows this is the new idea. He's watching, but maybe for whatever reason, he hasn't written about us either. But they know, the powers of radio, the Talkers Magazine knows, the head of Talkers and the general manager, they know about us. Media consultants know about us. You know, some very, very, you know, big people in Washington, they know about us from the other people in Washington that are on the show. You know, I'm not going to go into a whole bunch of names here of who knows who, but I've had some pretty amazing contacts. I mean, that's how we got Dr. Peter Pry on the show. You know, people who knew people who knew people. You know, that's how I got Doug McGregor on the show. You know, going to CPAC is how I got Gordon Chang on my show. And Grover Norquist and Walter Williams and all these other people. So we're known, but we're not known. There's still this reluctance to wade into this brand new area that we're just busting right through every day, which is action radio and a citizen legislature. So that's what's going on with that article.
To make a short story long. Yeah, it's just interesting because part of me, Greg, really misses the old, I mean, when I was a kid and young adult, I remember that the radio shows I used to listen to going to work, and I miss them. Because my job is to be very stressful, and what I mean by that, it's like crap happens to people, and I get that, but we see some horrible situations. And to be able to laugh about things and just, to me, that's so important. And so I miss the talk radio shows that were on back then that I listened to. You know, they took a situation, and it may have been a serious situation, but they always found, you know, something, you know, good or something just to talk about or just to make it seem, oh, my God, it's not as bad as it seems or whatever. But also they just took what happened in their life and just turned it into something like you just would laugh about it. And so it's like I miss those days. And I'm one that I don't get traffic on my phone, so I would love to have someone say, hey, but you know where I'm at, we don't have to worry about that because there's hardly nobody here. But I like that to know, hey, don't go there, because even on when I use my GPS, it's not always accurate about slowdowns. It's pretty accurate, but you don't know why the slowdown. It could say for 5 miles and then it ends up being 20, you know, just because they keep advancing it. And so to me it's nice, but is that 100% correct? No, and I say that because I talked to a friend, told me, this is years ago, but she said that she knew people that used to call in to the radio stations and report like an accident or something, slow down, and there was none. They just did it like as a prank. But
oh, that's not
I
good.
Miss those times. I really do. Yeah. It's like you get, you know, and I know there's still some people out there, but there are some people out there, probably one couple, not even a couple, but one pairing that I used to listen to years ago. Now I can't even listen to them anymore. But all the other ones, unfortunately, are long gone.
Well, part
because
of
changes
is that,
in their radio programming. You know,
yeah.
They may have changed the station to rock, from rock to country or country to rock or whatever. But
you
I get
the
what
biggest
you're
problem?
Saying, though. Definitely. I get what you're saying. Anything that stays stagnant is not going to be around.
Well, one of the problems, and this is something that I've criticized radio for, too, so much of it's pre-recorded now. You know, you're getting, in fact, I know how they do it because I went to a radio school for this. I mean, this is how I can do all the promos and things that I do. All these things that I make with the voiceover and the music and the things in the background, there's a program called Adobe Audition, and this is what most stations use. Now, their program's, you know, more sophisticated and therefore more expensive than mine, but they're programming all kinds of stuff they put in. But I've got a multi-track recorder in my computer, and when I make those Santa Rosa Volunteers things with several different pieces of music all set at different decibel levels, and I'm doing a voiceover, and I'm merging and mashing and, you know, normalizing and doing all the things I do to produce those things. That's regular. That's pretty, you know, sophisticated radio production that they would do at the big major stations. In fact, we're using the same software. Like I said, theirs just has more stuff. But my stuff's pretty good. You know, the basic one that they give out to people. Well, they don't give it. You got to pay for it. But that's what I use. But the difference is that our show is live. You know, we make mistakes, they're out there. We don't hide our mistakes. Whereas if we were a typical show today, they're taking out all the mistakes. The mistakes are some of the best part. I mean, what do you like about the live show of the 50s? The bloopers, where something went wrong, where someone said something really stupid, because we do. But we keep those in on purpose because they're funny, because that's life, that we're human beings. And when we say something ridiculous, I'll correct myself on the air. If I say something inherently stupid, which I do occasionally, I said something the other day, I said, no, that's not right. Let me think that through. You know, and that's, but normally that would be edited out. So they take out the humanity. They take out the spontaneity. They take out the creativity, because the radio consultants, the bean counters, the program directing people, the people that are looking at the ratings, the people that, as Fred says, 250 songs per station. I would say it's more like 50. I said some of these rock stations are playing the same 50 songs over and over and over and over, because that's what their bean counters have told them people want to hear. So you lose what made radio great. You know, what made AM radio great was that it was wide open and crazy for a while. And then it became homogenized and processed and became, you know, drive time. And then FM radio came along. And the people that you talked about, those funny hosts, the people that did the morning shows, those were FM people for the most part. But there were some AM too. But a lot of that was FM, because FM was the new Wild West. It was the new experiment. You know, it was Wolfman Jack. Yeah, I'll tell you what, we're going to play now. Yeah, that's going to be great. You know, it was things that were creative. And a lot of stations went to Mexico because they didn't have the FCC. And they broadcast 100,000, 150,000 watt stations, you know, from Mexico. They broadcast up to, you know, the Arctic Circle, especially at night. These things were so powerful. And they're all illegal. They're all pirate stations. There were stations off the coast. You know, there were AM radio stations on ships, you know, outside the 3-mile limit, so there was no FCC jurisdiction. And they were blasting 150,000 watts. So all this stuff was going on back when radio was fun. But eventually, the bean counters and the regulators and the people come in and take all the fun out of it. And I think that's what's happened to so much of radio. It's so regulated now, there's no fun. This is why I like to have fun. Pianki, one of our regular callers, is one of the funniest people on the show. I mean, he's downright hysterical sometimes. Yesterday was a good example. But just in the spirit of fun, I have tried to get several improv comedy people to come on and do like a comedy news report, just to add some fun, especially on Friday. So it's not for lack of trying that we're not getting more kind of crazy stuff in here, because it's out there. But comedy's tough. You know, life is easy, comedy is tough. So in comparison,
well,
but I'm certainly trying. Yeah, go ahead.
Different. Yeah, mm-hmm. Your program is different too. You know what I mean? It's like certain programs don't have to be, you know, fluff and all that, because mm-hmm. what it is, it's a different format. Yours is a different format. But I'm just mm-hmm. saying, to me, I miss those, because, you know, it's like, so that way it just puts me in a different relaxed tone when I get to work, you know, just mm-hmm. because it's like I'm not taking life so serious versus when we're talking politics, and some of this stuff can be pretty heavy. I mean, because I look at it and you're just like, oh my gosh, are you mm-hmm. kidding me? Is that really going on? And it mm-hmm. is.
Yeah.
And so it's like, it's just like the stuff that's going, what's going on the other day, and I heard about the vaccine mandates in Biden, which we know is clueless, but he said it's up to the states now. Well, mm-hmm. then they're like, but you know, if it's up to the states, you have a good governor like DeSantis and some of the other governors, great. But then you have some, I don't want to say idiot governors, but let's just call it like it is, like in Minnesota where I'm at, or New mm-hmm. York, or, you know, so many other states, California. I mean, they can run their state to the ground. Look what they're doing in New York City. That could happen to the whole state if a state governor is allowed to make the decision. Because why? You know, it's their own idiosyncrasy and ideologies that they want to promote. It's like the vaccine does. I mean, if the vaccine worked, there would not be as many people with the coronavirus. I don't care if it's coronavirus A, B, or C. You know, there wouldn't be, because it would be knocked out. If, what did we say the other day? I don't even know. The percentage of the people in the United States that had it. Okay. If majority of those or even half of those have been vaccinated that get it, then I would say the vaccine isn't helping. So why
well,
are they pushing it? They're pushing it now on kids. The kids are going to have it
yeah.
some places to go back to school. Are you kidding
yeah.
me? A public education. That is outright nonsense. We don't
mm-hmm.
know what this is going to do to them. I could say, yes, if we had 100% sure, we know what they're going to be like in 50 years, 20 years, when they want to have children, then I'd say, okay, you can make a reasonable decision saying, oh, maybe they should get the vaccine. But based on what we know now, I would say run.
Yeah, it's not helping. There was an article in Gateway Pundit based on two studies, one of them in Canada, the other in Denmark, that especially the Pfizer vaccine is causing far more illness than it's preventing. I mean, there's a minuscule, tiny little boost in your immune system temporarily, but then, of course, it drops, you know, from 90% you know, effective, as they say, down to about 20, you know, in 2 or 3 months. That's why they keep having these boosters. And even then, you know, each booster has a diminishing return. I bet you the more shots you get, the less effective each one is, because your body's adapting to it. And trying to stop the fact that it's trying to screw around with your immune system. But the other one, remember that report we just did on how it's systematically reducing your immune system, the more vaccines you get? So these things are far more dangerous than they are – there's far more negatives than there are positives. And yet they're pushing it on us. And for Brandon to say that this is a state – you know, this is a state solution, you know, well, then why do you have federal mandates? You know, why is there a CDC? Why are they issuing guidelines? Why don't they just, you know, shut up and go away?
Last year, he's blaming Trump and saying it was a federal issue. And he said, mm-hmm. if because of how many people died last year under Trump, he needs to resign. Well, a
mm-hmm.
lot more died under Biden. And we have
mm-hmm.
the vaccine
that?
If that supposedly worked. So I think
yeah.
he needs to resign. You know, and then what really got me last night was Benny. I don't know if you listened to him on Facebook, but we talked
mm-hmm.
about this. Benny Johnson. We talked
nope.
about this a while ago. A while
mm-hmm.
ago about Biden building, not Biden building, us, the taxpayers, building the fence around his house, his beach house in Delaware. Okay,
uh-huh.
he's got a beach house, and then he went on about, you know, trying to go see it, now, this beautiful wall made of brick and whatever, and all the security he had there. And I just became so frustrated and almost helpless for the fact that, look at these people in border areas, where
right.
their kids are afraid to go to school. They've lost their livelihood because criminals and people coming across the border are killing their animals, their
mm-hmm.
livelihood, and nothing is being done. No, that wall had to stop. Their security had to stop. They're fearing their life. But Biden, the crook and chief in office, he's got this, what do we say, $400-some million, whatever the fence costs around his beach house. And if I'd be the people
know,
that
yeah.
live with this by him, I'd be ticked off too. For one, you got to, I mean, I don't care. A wall is a wall. And you got this, you know, in your gated community.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, where's the outrage in people? Democrats too. Where is the outrage? That it's another example of do as I say, but not as I do. And that they're more important than we are.
Well, part of the problem with having politics in your life is that you realize how apathetic most people are. You know, I've said this before, the percent of us that are active have to drag, you know, and the other 60%, you know, across the line so that we can then, you know, reduce the other 20% of the Marxists to as little impact as possible. you know, they're winning. The Marxists are winning right now because their message is more, you know, seductive to those that are selfish, greedy, and lazy. You know, because if you're selfish, greedy, and lazy, it's much more is much easier to say, you know, give me money for not working. You know, pay off my student loans. I want housing subsidies. I want food subsidies. I want free health care. I want. And this is why democracies never work, because the population says, I want. And the politicians say, well, I'll give you, but, you know, you lose your freedom. You lose your single family home. You lose your car. You know, you have an electric car. You know, and then California says, you know, you can't charge your electric car when there's a power shortage. Well, who caused the power shortage? Well, California, because they didn't build power plants. You know, yet they brought in, you know, X million extra people. You know, California doubled in population the time I was there. I got there in the early 80s. And by the time I left, you know, 5 years ago, there was twice the population. But the freeways, the power plants, the reservoirs, you know, the infrastructure was still the same as it was when I got there, because the wacko environmentalists wouldn't allow anything to go through. And they're dumping most of their fresh water out through the Golden Gate so they can save a snail darter, which is basically an anchovy-like pizza topping. You know, and it isn't even native anyway to the Delta. And it gets eaten up by a bunch of other fish that aren't native either. So, I mean, the absurdity, the ludicrous nature of all this, I think that's part of the frustration. So let me ask you a question. Is it politics that frustrates you, or is it the current political situation that frustrates you? And the reason I ask is because things are pretty good under Trump. And I'll go, you know, we can go over the differences a bit. But do you think maybe, because we're under an oppressive Marxist regime that was imposed on us by government. Government picked Biden. Mike Pence, Chucky Schumer, Nancy Pelosi, Mitch McConnell. They picked Brandon to be in the White House. Those four, Pence, McConnell, Schumer, and Pelosi, are the main people. Even McCarthy, too. I don't know. I mean, who knows what he does behind the scenes. But this government was picked by government.
Oh, I believe he did, too.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me. Yeah. There's why he can't be Speaker.
Well,
if he's Speaker, if the Republicans win Congress and they make McCarthy Speaker, it's over. He's going to be just like Paul Ryan. He'll talk a good game, and he'll subvert everything that they try to do. He'll be the deep state's operative. That's what I think. So, back to the question.
Yeah.
Is it the current political situation, or is it politics in general?
I think it's the political situation, but not just because of Biden. It's because of everybody in there. Pelosi, Schumer, even poor Harry Reid. I can't call him poor, but Harry Reid that died this past week. They did nothing positive to help our country. They're all leeches. They make billions off, well, not billions, millions, multiple millions of dollars off of us. You know, we can't do certain things, but they can go and buy stock before, you know, people know what's going on, but they know what's going on and make their millions. And then they sit there and try to ram things down our throat. Well, we have to do this. No, we can't go get our haircut, but, oh, they can go get their haircut. We can't go eat in a restaurant, but no, they can go eat in a restaurant. It's like, and people don't speak up. It's like, no, it's like what's right for one should be right for all.
But people don't speak up because they're afraid. Because they've been encouraged to speak up, because we don't have the character we used to have. We don't have the guts that we used to have. You know, we don't have – people are, you know, the prejudice that's out there that's incredible, especially, you know, the newly oppressed white people that are afraid to do anything even when – well, here's a story for you. I want to talk about this for a second. And I think it's a fake story, but I'm curious. Up in Minnesota, the school board's reported to have had a new policy where they're going to pay, you know, people of other than white color, you know, as opposed to people of white color, this is my new designation, more money. So in other words, if you're a minority, you're going to get paid more. I think it's a fake story. I think it's from TikTok. I think it's from China. But just the idea, but I think a lot of people would do that if they could. And the polite white people aren't going to speak up as much because the polite white people have been are afraid to be called a racist, as Bianchi would say. You know, and so there's a lot of people that are frustrated because they want to speak up, but they don't want to be called a racist, and they need to get over that fear right away. I mean, if I was worried about that, I wouldn't say half the things I say on this show. But so there's a lot of people that want to speak up that don't, and they're afraid to, and they need to get over that. And people are, the school board people. The parents that are speaking up at the school boards are getting over that fear. The people that are starting to come out and campaign, the new people that are running for office compared to the establishment. We've got a whole new crop of people running for office that are very different than the establishment types that, you know, made the Faustian bargain to shut up, vote as the party tells you, and have a nice career and then get a decent retirement or a huge retirement. You know, so it's
right,
things are changing.
I don't know about Minnesota, the school board there. I don't, or not school board, the work. I don't know. I haven't heard that, but, you know, I don't have a TV, so I don't hear local news. But the thing is, I think we have to be careful with the politicians, too, because there's some in there now. As I said, we told you before, I think Matt Gaetz, boom, should be gone. Marjorie Taylor Greene, gone. I think they just, they're just like Fauci. And the fact that I think they love the attention, the media, mm-hmm. whatever's the talking point of the day, they're right there, they're right at it. And then where are they? I don't know. Don't hear from them.
Well, if they had bills that they had submitted. Well, I mean, I know Marjorie Taylor Greene had a bill that I think it was to get Fauci to retire, which is pretty minuscule. You know, they're not doing the big picture. They're going for the fluff without the substance. Now, Gaetz, I want to talk to him again. I'd love to get him on the show. I'd love to start giving him some ideas because we have some real substance here. You know, when we talk about ending the withholding tax while you're earning your standard deduction, so that people get their money this year rather than have to file for it next year. That would be huge for the economy. And that's a nonpartisan bill. You know, to Republicans is a tax cut. To Democrats, it helps working families. So a lot of the stuff we do here is nuts and bolts nonpartisan. You know, but that would be a substantive bill. Our bill for a public comment period for any budget item over $100 million. I don't even know if that's the right number. I just kind of, you know, picked it out of a hat. But the idea of public comment for all budget measures, you know. So what we're trying to do here, as the politicians have given up any pretense of serving the public, and they're now pretty much serving themselves, and they've given up any pretense of independence as they completely work for their party. You know, there's a vacuum right now. There's a vacuum in politics that this is one of those rare times in history that I think, well, for me at least, I think I've actually timed something correctly. There is a spirit out there that people want change, but they don't know how to do it. All right. And yet you have the leaders, the alleged leaders of the Geldings, the Gelding old party, the Republicans, have absolutely no new ideas. Yet we do. So this to me, you know, of all the times in history to come forward with a citizen legislature to give the politicians the ideas that we want them to work on, there is no better time than this Marxist insurrection we're under right now to do what I want to do with Action Radio. If things were good, you know, it would be damn near impossible because people are like, oh, things are good. Well, cushy, what's the problem? You know, 2 years ago, when before COVID, you know, when Trump was riding high, you know, I was still doing Action Radio. And there wasn't as much interest simply because things were good. The economy was good. The energy situation was good. You know, inflation was low. We were respected around the world. You know, Kim Jong-il wasn't firing off missiles. You know, NATO was paying their fair share. China had billions upon billions of dollars of tariffs. They're actually starting to trade fairly. You know, all the things, you know, the illegals weren't crossing the border at 2 million, you know, per year. You know, life was pretty good under Trump. You know, in fact, is the best it had been probably since Reagan. And people were comfortable. So here I come along and say, well, we need to make things a whole lot better. But people were pretty comfortable. Now it's not so comfortable. Okay. Now things really suck. They really do. There's nothing that's happening in Washington that I think most people would approve of. So if these guys are going to run on higher energy, higher inflation, you know, lower everything else, a completely lower standard of living, that's not really popular. And so the only way they're going to be able to win is to cheat. The only way the globalists are going to be able to win is if the Republicans do take Congress, have fewer than a two-thirds majority, so Brandon can still veto anything. So unless the Republicans get more than two-thirds, nothing's going to change, you know, because Brandon's in the White House. You know, and if Mitch McConnell is the majority leader again, if the Republicans take the Senate and they keep Mitch McConnell, well, that's totally lost. If the House, you know, goes Republican and they do another Paul Ryan like Kevin McCarthy, that's lost. So you can win the battle and still lose the war. And I think there's an amazing amount of frustration out there with people saying, wait a minute, you know, we need an alternative. We need alternative ideas. And as it turns out, as far as I can tell, and this may sound arrogant once again, but as far as I can tell, the only genuine source of new ideas out there right now is us. So maybe this is a good time for what we're doing. We just need people to write about us, talk about us, and share the bills and share the shows. That's all it is. Pretty simple, actually. Someone's going to break the ice. Someone's going to write that first article, first major article in a major publication. Someone's going to report on us someday. Hopefully at CPAC I'll meet someone that will do that. And we'll know that in February. Anyway, that's what I think. Nice little opening.
Yeah, this is good. Yeah.
Let me take a little break here for a bit. I've got several things that I wrote down before the show. We've covered the fake, what I think is a fake story, that Minnesota school board. I think it's fake because I think it's TikTok. I know TikTok is from the Chinese Communist Party. I know they use artificial intelligence with TikTok to, you know, get all your personal information. So anybody that watches TikTok, you might as well just send the Chinese Communist Party an email with all your personal information because that's what TikTok's for. So, and China is known for sending disinformation propaganda stories to basically, you know, get race wars going in this country because it benefits them. That's why I think it's a fake story. Things I want to talk about, the CDC has said that cruise ships are dangerous. Don't go cruising. You know, and I think that's because they proved the lie that that isolated environment where everybody's vaccinated and people are getting COVID shows that the vaccinations don't work. We'll talk about that. Illegal aliens are being flown into airports in the middle of the night. So if I were in the tower, I would tell those tower people, don't clear them to land. Sorry. Airplane on the runway. Nope, can't land here. I mean, people want to protest. Any government employee, it'd be interesting, but the tower people are feds, you know, air traffic controllers. But it'd be interesting if one of those people said, oh, sorry, can't land here. They refused them clearance to land. That would be funny. Brandon's withholding lifelong monoclonal bodies from Florida because he hates us for being independent. And I got my priorities for next year. So those are the things we can talk about. And then I got this article. It's a fascinating article from my Marxist alma mater, University of Massachusetts at Amherst, talking about their January 6th poll. And they're shocked. Shocked, I tell you, to find that there are Republicans who don't believe that Brandon is president. Shocked. I mean, it's absolutely staggering. It's amazing. Let me play a couple of my earlier Santa Rosa Volunteers pieces because I've been lax in making a new one. So I'm going to play you. Let's play the Sedition Act one again. That's one of my favorites. And I'll be back in a little bit. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, insights into our founding documents, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers here in Santa Rosa County, Florida. Santa Rosa Volunteers is available at their website, srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. This week, I want to break from the Federalist and Anti-Federalist papers to consider one of the many aberrations in the early days of the land of the free. That is the Sedition Act of 1798. Granted, this is always grouped with the companion bills on aliens, but I see them as separate issues. Why would a new government formed from colonies under rules of sedition from a foreign monarch bring about that same tyranny into our government so early in its existence? The Constitution was ratified on September 17, 1787. The Bill of Rights was ratified on December 15, 1791. So it was already in the supreme law of the land that Congress could make no law that abridged the freedom of speech, thus making any subordinate law on sedition unconstitutional automatically. And yet, it happened. All power corrupts. Absolute power corrupts absolutely. Therefore, if you have a government of good laws and yet bad officials who crave the preservation of power more than the alleged guarantees of freedom, freedom takes second place. You can see that in evidence throughout the entire government response to a coronavirus that would have run its course naturally in about 10 weeks, just like the flu every year, and would have been gone by the summer of 2020 when all viruses fade until the winter. And yet, look at the massive amount of power taken from the people in a government of the people, by the people, and for the people. Sedition is defined in my online dictionary as conduct or speech inciting people to rebel against the authority of a state or monarch. So what did the government put into a law that so obviously came from the former ruler of the colonies into the new government of the United States? The Sedition Act is titled An Act for the Punishment of Certain Crimes Against the United States. In other words, conduct or speech that criticizes the government. Where have we heard that before? Section 1 of the Sedition Act reads, "Be it enacted by the Senate and House of Representatives of the United States of America, in Congress assembled, that if any persons shall unlawfully combine or conspire together with intent to oppose any measure or measures of the government of the United States, which are or shall be directed by proper authority, or to impede the operation of any law of the United States, or to intimidate or prevent any person holding a place or office in or under the government of the United States from undertaking, performing, are executing his trust or duty, and if any person or persons with intent as aforesaid shall counsel, advise, or attempt to procure any insurrection, riot, unlawful assembly, or combination, whether such conspiracy, threatening, counsel, advice, or attempt shall have the proposed effect or not, he or they shall be deemed guilty of a high misdemeanor. This, of course, violates the entire First Amendment, except with regard to religion. It gets worse. Section 2 says in part, "And be it further enacted, that if any person shall write, print, utter, or publish, or shall cause or procure to be written, printed, uttered, or published, or shall knowingly and willingly assist or aid in writing, printing, uttering, or publishing any false, scandalous, and malicious writing or writings against the government of the United States, or either House of the Congress of the United States, or of the President of the United States, with intent to defame the said government, or either House of the said Congress, or the said President, or to bring them, or either of them, into contempt or disrepute, or to excite against them, or either or any of them, the hatred of the good people of the United States." In other words, saying anything against the government of the United States or anyone in it is a crime punishable by jail and fines. This effectively creates political prisoners in the United States, much like the innocent people in the D.C. Gulag jail for being in the Capitol building January 6th. If that were not bad enough, within the Sedition Act is probably the most dangerous provision to individual liberty that I have yet seen in the founding documents, and provides a shocking precursor to the future neutralization of our jury system and the supremacy of the government courts over the people. Section 3. "And be it further enacted and declared that if any person shall be prosecuted under this act for the writing or publishing any libel aforesaid, it shall be lawful for the defendant upon the trial of the cause to give an evidence in his defense, the truth of the matter contained in publication charged as a libel, and the jury who shall try the cause shall have a right to determine the law and the facts under the direction of the court, as in other cases." The key words here are "under the direction of the court." The whole point of a jury is to not only determine the guilt of the defendant, the restitution in a civil case, but most important for the jury is to determine whether the laws implied are fair, just, constitutional, and are not arbitrary and capricious reservoirs of unlimited government power over the people. Jurors can do whatever they want because they are the representatives of the people over the judges who work for the government and therefore work for the people. And yet, as virtually every judge instructs their juries, that they can only judge the facts of the case and not the law. That lie is repeated every day in courts all across the country. And now I see where it came from. Section 3 is really saying that the juries, and therefore the people, are under the direction of the court. What the Sedition Act really does is makes criticism of the government a crime and allows government judges to direct the juries that would hear any case under this act, thus destroying the right of free speech and to redress grievances against the government and to due process and the right to a jury trial of one's peers. One could imagine anyone charged under this act would be guilty until proven innocent, and then ruined by government if they were proved innocent. Can you think of any parallels to the rights of free speech today? The Sedition Act was approved July 14, 1798, signed by John Adams, President of the United States. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers. Their website is srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. Please share this report to anyone who needs it. Dangerously cool. Okay, we're back. And we have, I was just doing a little communicating during that time there. Jim's going to be joining us. And so Jim Dykes, who does the Second Amendment report, will be here probably, hopefully a little earlier. Normally he comes on at 8 o'clock. does the 8 to 8:30. In fact, normally on Fridays, actually when we get going next year, we're going to have, I think, five reports. We'll have Alan Dawson from Belize at 6, hopefully Shirley Wattrell at 6:30. We'd have, I think, 7, someone's going to know, 7, I'll check my schedule. Anyway, I know I had someone at 7. Then I had Derek at 7:30. And then I had, well, I think, no, 7's open. Then we got Jim at 8 and Chappie at 8:30. So Fridays normally are really busy around here. It just so happens that we're sitting on a New Year's Eve at this point. And so most people are off this week. Most talk shows are doing repeats, and we're not. We're live because it's more fun to be live. Speaking of which, we have our live chat. If anybody wants to type in a message from anywhere in the world, and we already had Switzerland this week, so we're definitely international here. Just go to our broadcast page. I think on the upper left corner, you'll find something that allows you to get a free account with Blog Talk, and that will allow you to type in on live chat. Also, we have for contributors, for sponsors, for people that want to help support Action Radio, we have a PayPal account at paypal.me/actionradio. That's easy to find us, paypal.me/actionradio. And so if anybody wants to, you know, I can make commercials for you, donations, sponsors, anybody, feel free to do that. I'll announce that again at the end of the show. That's on our broadcast page also. So you'll be able to find that as well. So let's get the schedule. Let's get the daily. Sorry. I love to do this. Daily schedule and see what the dear boy is up to today. And well, let me see. Friday, December 31st, 2021, the last day of the year. Says the president and the first lady, that's a misnomer, Brandon and his wife will remain in Wilmington, Delaware. The president, excuse me, Brandon, has no public event scheduled. So apparently he's been on vacation all week. I think we've seen videos of him, you know, playing with the dog in the surf and, you know, Jill looking on, making sure nothing happens to her gravy train to the White House. Yesterday, the president, excuse me, I keep reading this stuff. That's why I get screwed up. Brandon held a private phone call with Vladimir Putin of Russia to discuss a range of topics, including upcoming diplomatic engagements with Russia. In other words, Russian collusion. So Brandon had his Russian collusion call at 3:30 yesterday. That was his only activity. All the problems in the United States that he's caused, all the things that are happening, the things that frustrate Gene like crazy. And what does Brandon do? He talks to Putin. Yeah. And nobody reports that as Russian collusion. Anyway. He actually did a few more things Wednesday, but not much. Anyway, so the president's schedule, excuse me, Brandon's schedule, I can't believe that. Basically, nothing's happening. So there we go. All right, I want to get to this. Look at my announcements. I got that done. I want to get to this article I found fascinating. And Gene, feel free to join us at any time. So I graduated from the University of Massachusetts. I actually got a couple of degrees because I couldn't decide what I wanted to do because I really wanted to go to flight school. And I couldn't manage to find myself down to Embry-Riddle in Florida, although I desperately wanted to go, you know, all the way from New England. So that didn't quite work out. Anyway, so I ended up at the University of Massachusetts. And I figure I'll, you know, get my education, get my money together, go to flight school and become an airline pilot. Well, that didn't exactly work out either. So, you know, hopefully Action Radio will allow me to do a bunch of flying again, which is what I very much want to do, mostly in a jet upside down. Anyway, so I went to the University of Massachusetts. Not a place I intended to go, not a place I particularly wanted to go, but it was pretty much my only option in terms of cost and distance and everything else. So I ended up, and I didn't want to have student loans. And so that was the big problem. I knew I was on my own. I didn't want to burden myself with loans because I actually believed that I would have to pay them back. And so I went to the University of Massachusetts, worked my summers, you know, never took a student loan, worked in college, worked in the summers, actually had a business washing and waxing airplanes because I was, you know, doing flying stuff and doing landscaping, minor landscaping, lawn mowing, you know, things like that. And so that's how I supported myself and got through school. Anyway, UMass at the time I was there, and this is late 70s, early 80s, was incredibly liberal. And now they're outright Marxist. And it's funny, you know, they call me every year for money, of course, right? You know how that goes. And I'm like, no. I said, stop being Marxist. You know, stop catering to the lowest levels of Marxism and stop being racist. And so out of the racist Marxist tradition comes this survey. And the article was just published. In fact, One American News had it. That's what alerted me to it. But instead of going to the news stories about the poll, I actually went to the poll itself. And this is from the University of Massachusetts at Amherst, where the slogan is "Be Revolutionary." Well, they fit right in on my show. And that's what we do, too. We're revolutionary as well, although not exactly the direction that they're thinking. And so the headline is, 1 year later, research, new UMass Amherst poll finds continued national political division over the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol. Well, even the title's wrong. First of all, it wasn't an attack on the Capitol. It was an attack on the Constitution. And so even there, and this is one of the least biased things I've read on this. There's something called Mass Life, which is Massachusetts, M-A-S-S. And they said, despite absolutely no evidence, Republicans still, want to believe that Brandon's not the president. What do you mean no evidence? How many audits have we had? How many hearings did Jenna Ellis and Rudy Giuliani conduct? How many thousands upon thousands of affidavits have people filed about vote fraud? We need no evidence. There's so much evidence. It's there's more evidence of vote fraud than there is honest elections. That's the funny part. Besides the fact that seven states sent in Trump electors and Biden electors, the governors and the secretaries of state sent in the Biden electors, the state legislature sent in the Trump electors, and of course state legislatures have jurisdiction by the Constitution over federal elections and who the electors are. So of course the folks in Congress, did they count the state Trump electors? No, they violated the Constitution, took the Brandon electors and used that as an excuse to install Brandon illegally in the White House. Okay, that's what happened. And it happened on January 6th. Now, to cover up what happened on January 6th so that nobody knows what I just said, they've had this elaborate scheme of lies after lies after lies, daily lies, and the Daily Lie Committee, responsible for the Daily Lie, is the January 6th Committee. Those are the ones that are subpoenaing Roger Stone, and they wanted Trump's tax records, and they wanted Mark Meadows, and all these different people. They're subpoenaing everybody, Peter Navarro. And it's all for the purpose of covering up their crime of stealing the White House on January 6th by refusing to go through a legitimate constitutional count of the proper electors. And the biggest offender of all is Mike Pence. Mike Pence, who could have sent the electors back in December, he could have sent them back some other time, November, after the election, and he could have sent them back January 6th and said, look, you know what? You guys, you states, you seven states, that actually would have the proper outcome of the election, because they took the wrong electors from those seven states. That's what installed Brandon in the White House. All right. Had they done this properly and took the Trump electors from the state legislatures, Trump would be in the presidency where he's supposed to be. So anyway, so they have to cover all this up. So what we've got here is a Marxist poll of the cover up, and what they're trying to measure is how much people believe in the real insurrection, as opposed to who believes in the one that they're trying to perpetuate as an insurrection, when in fact it was nothing but a bunch of folks walking through the Capitol, which is why I call January 6th the Capitol Hill Invitational Walk-In. So fast forward. I've already written this guy, by the way, and I've invited him on the show. Tatish Teta, I believe that sounds to me like a Nigerian name. And so I want to confirm with Pianki, who's listening. Pianki, this is your call-in time. If Tatish Teta, that's T-A-T-I-S-H-E, last name N-T-E-T-A, who is the political science person most responsible for this poll, I've invited him on the show. But I'm just curious because we'll get some insight from Pianki if he's Nigerian, if that's his background. I want to find out all that I can about this person before they come on the show, which should be interesting. Anyway, so the article, I've already got the title, 1 year later, new UMass Amherst poll finds continued national political division over the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol. In other words, they're measuring how effective their lies are. All right, this is what I believe this poll was really all about, which makes sense. Anyway, so the article says, 1 year after thousands of supporters of former President Donald Trump stormed the U.S. Capitol in an attempt to protest and disrupt the certification of Joe Biden's victory in the 2020 presidential election, the results of a new national University of Massachusetts Amherst poll released today show 71% of Republicans and one-third of the nation continue to believe that Biden's victory was illegitimate, and that Republicans continue to blame Democrats, Antifa, and the Capitol Police for the events of January 6th. They also oppose both the continuation of law enforcement efforts to prosecute the rioters and attempts to learn more about what happened that day. Okay, that's pretty damn biased, if you ask me. And this is one of the better articles I found. And then they actually did the poll, so they're making an attempt at somewhat neutrality. So you'll read their crazy poll. Now the poll, I believe actually, once we get the numbers, I think you'll find the poll is rather accurate. And that's what's so fascinating about this is that the poll is pretty good. The propaganda describing the poll, of course, is horrible. So if I had to rewrite this in terms of you know, as neutral as I can. Of course, I have my own bias too. Well, let's make this the conservative version. 1 year after thousands of supporters of current President Donald Trump walked into the U.S. Capitol after Antifa, BLM, the FBI, and other agent provocateurs to overthrow the legitimate count of Trump electors in the 2020 presidential election, therefore installing Biden illegally, the results of a new National University of Massachusetts poll showed that 71% of Republicans who are correct and one-third of the nation continue, rightly know that Biden's victory was illegitimate, and the Republicans are blaming Democrats, Antifa, and the Capitol Hill police for the events of January 6th, stopping the legitimate constitutional count. Okay, that's how it should read. Okay, and that's the difference between the events as I believe they happen and what these people are saying. But let's go with what they're saying, and we'll continue on here. It says the poll of 1,000 respondents found that only 58% of Americans believe that Biden's electoral victory was legitimate. That's not even two-thirds, folks. So 58% of Americans believe that Biden's electoral victory was legitimate. I find that hard to believe, first of all, because you've got 80 million Trump supporters, most of which don't think that Brandon actually won at all. And this is more than a fifth, 22% saying that it was definitely not legitimate. So and this is where it gets interesting in English. Now, legitimate to me is an infinitive. In other words, it's like pregnancy. You know, you can't be almost. There is no partially legitimate. There is no gray area. It's either legitimate or it's not. It's like, you know, although Johnson, I'm sure, will argue whether things can be legal or not. And I think there's probably gray area there. If something is true or it's not, you know, so and we can probably argue that. But I think the idea of definitely not legitimate, partially not legitimate, and all the different variations of legitimate seems kind of silly. But anyway, that's what they say. So there's 1,000 respondents, which actually is a good national sample. Okay. Apparently you can, if you pick the respondents across the board, across the country, 1,000 people is pretty representative of the nation. So they've got this polling down to a science. So only 58% of Americans believe that Biden's electoral victory was legitimate. More than a fifth, 22% saying that it was definitely not legitimate. Okay. Anyway, and that's from April 2021, UMass Amherst poll. All right. So only one-fifth of Republicans, 21%, view Biden's victory as legitimate. Well, they're the never Trumpers. I'll tell you right now, 21% of Republicans that think Biden's actually, you know, the real president, they're the never Trumpers. That's wishful thinking. All right. So here's a quote. Given the continued questioning of Biden's victory by prominent Republican elected officials, conservative media personalities, that would be me, and former President Trump, and current President Trump, it's no surprise that 7 in 10 Republicans, conservatives, and Trump voters view the results of the 2020 election with skepticism, if not outright disbelief. And that's a quote from Tatish Ndeta, who is the man I want to have on the show, okay, associate professor of political science at UMass Amherst and director of the poll. He's the man that we want to get on the show. He says, however, overall American opinion on the legitimacy of the 2020 presidential election has remained steady since April, as close to 6 in 10 Americans, you know, view Biden's victory as legitimate. Well, that's still not that's, you know, 40% of the country thinks we got a false president. That's pretty high. I can't think of anything even close. So what do you think of this so far? Why are they even doing this poll, Gene? If Biden's legitimate, why are they even doing this poll?
I don't even think that's accurate. The reason I say that is the other day I saw, I can't remember what the poll numbers were, but it was a lot of Democrats, like over half believed, I think it was 60% believed that basically the election wasn't fair last year. So it'd be interesting to get a poll, a real accurate poll. Now, we never will, but I think the big thing is there's many things going on in Washington. Partly, I think, part of it is they're trying to do things to kind of start pushing Biden out of there. But the problem is you can say, okay, to get Kamala in there, they know that would be even worse. So I don't know why they're doing that. But if you look at even CNN sometime and their coverage based on what I see from different reports that I listen to, that they're not even, you know, how they used to worship the ground Biden walked on, but now they're even getting kind of testy with him. But some of the stuff is actually how he responds. People say Trump was so non-presidential, how he responded to people. I think Biden is even worse. If you really look at sometimes what he says and how he says it, so condescending. And it's like he should worship the ground they walk on for how well he was treated or have been treated. I mean, they've covered up pretty much everything in his whole political life, which is volume.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, the University of Delaware Judicial Watch is subpoenaing they've got a Freedom of Information. I think they have a lawsuit now that says that they have to release the information from Brandon's papers. Yeah. I still think they're doing this to measure how much their propaganda is working. Because if you look at the orientation of UMass, it's a Marxist, leftist campus now. It's in a Marxist leftist state. It's in a state that voted overwhelmingly for Brandon. It's in a state that does propaganda all the time. How many Republicans? I think there are fewer Republicans per capita in Massachusetts than California. California actually has a pretty big amount of Republicans, but they're all in the middle of the state and out in the Sierras. And up north in Redding, which is a fascinating city, by the way. It's such a total contrast to San Francisco. It's like the direct opposite. I think this, and this guy, Tatish, Nteta, also brings race into everything. We're going to get into that in a minute, too. So he's looking at this from a critical race theory, Marxist orientation, from a critical race theory, Marxist-oriented university. So, of course, he's the director of the poll. you're not going to have, John Smith, white, male, Christian, Southern Baptist running this poll at the University of Massachusetts. No. You're going to have this guy running it, which makes perfect sense. So that's what I find interesting. Let me go on further here because, my case is that this is a propaganda measure. Anyway, it says public officials need to shore up faith in how we vote. And this is Raymond LaRaja, professor of political science. I don't think there are any white people at UMass anymore, at least in the administration. Well, there are students, but anyway, I think everybody's a person of color. If you want to work at UMass, you better be a person of color. So I should tell them I'm part Egyptian on my grandmother's side. Maybe that'll get me in someday. Oh, that and the fact that I was made a member of the Creek tribe, so I'm actually American Indian also. So I'm doing pretty well with my people of color designations. So I might use actually put that in the census too. When they put, what are you for the census? I said Native American. Thank you, Creek tribe. Really appreciate being made a member of the tribe. That for which I'll be eternally grateful. Anyway, public officials need to show up faith in how we vote. Well, if you want to show up faith, make the vote honest. That's the easiest solution. Anyway, says Raymond LaRaja, professor of political science at UMass Amherst and associate director of the poll. Okay, so here we go. He says the top reason voters don't think Brandon's victory, Brandon's victory was legitimate, has to do with the belief in fraud. 83% of the poll's respondents cited fraudulent ballots being counted by election officials to help Brandon win in several states. Gee, that makes sense. Roughly the same percentage, 81%, claimed that absentee ballots from dead people also helped them. Meanwhile, 76% blamed non-citizens and other ineligible voters who cast ballots. What do you mean non-citizens? You mean illegal aliens? Let's be blunt here. Non-citizens, that's such a nice little term. Anyway, he said these are extremely worrisome perceptions, and improved faith in the electoral process won't happen until Republicans stop saying the election was stolen. No. No. Would you like to fill in the gap, Gene? What's going to help the process? Go ahead.
It's not going to stop until they fix the election process, so there is no cheating going on. They have to fix it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my gosh. The sad thing is, Greg, people believe it. People believe what he writes and says.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So they're saying it's a belief that Trump won. Well, it's not a belief. I think I'm convinced it's a reality that Trump won. And look at this. Improved faith in the electoral process won't happen until Republicans stop saying the election was stolen. So in other words, the problem with elections is perceptions. Well, he even says that too. Extremely worrisome perceptions. So their solution to election fraud is to change the perception, but not change the election fraud. That's what it sounds like.
It makes sense to me.
Because if they're really concerned with election fraud, this poll would be about what do you think of the Dominion voting machines? What do you think of mail-in ballots? What do you think of law changes, because of COVID? What do you think of the fact that the state legislatures, had their rules changed and have been disempowered? What do you think of the fact that January 6th, we haven't gotten to January 6th yet. Well, that's next. So what do you think of the fact that January 6th suspended a constitutional procedure to legitimately count the electors from the several states and allow for challenges? I mean, that's what really happened. We've talked about the talk. So you want to talk about getting folks on the show, Marjorie Taylor Greene and Matt Gaetz? I want to ask them about the talk. I want to ask them what happened between when the Capitol Hill Invitational walk-in got going, when they suspended the actual proceeding challenging the electors by state, and when they all came back and took a vote at the end. That's what I want to know. There's your insurrection. And if there's a gap in the congressional record. All right. There's nothing in the congressional record from the time they suspended, you know, after the Capitol Hill Invitational walk-in began, when the Trump supporters actually showed up an hour later, right? And when they came back to vote, where 12 senators and 147, I think, Republican House members voted against Brandon, which is not enough to change it. You know, that's a fairly small minority compared. Well, it's about 12, sort of about. It'll be about 25%, about a quarter. 12 is just under a quarter of the Senate. 147 out of 500 members is about a fifth of the House. So, yeah, so there's a quarter and a fifth. So 20%, 25%. Not a huge majority. But since they didn't do the process properly, they still need to go back and finish it. We still have to go back January 6th and do that process before Brandon can be legitimately inaugurated, which he wouldn't be because they would have to take the Trump electors that came from the states, which is why this is so interesting. Anyway, back to the article. Republicans continue to defend the events of January 6th and those who perpetrated the attacks on the Capitol. Well, who was attacked? The police let the people in. You look at the videos, there were more Capitol Hill police saying, come on down, than there were people actually breaking in. The people that broke in were Antifa BLM, and that was staged for the cameras to look like it was an actual break-in. We know these were agent provocateurs. Go ahead.
I've got a question.
Uh-huh.
And this doesn't have it does have to do with it, but not a little bit different. But the police officer that shot the one that Babbitt. Okay.
Yep, Lieutenant Michael J. Byrd. Lieutenant Michael J. Byrd of the Capitol Hill Police. Yep.
Why isn't he charged with something? And I ask you that because the girl here in Minnesota got charged with murder or not. What is mm-hmm. it? Manslaughter, whatever, two things.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason, because she thought she pulled her taser, but she pulled her gun. All right?
Right.
And, okay, was it a mistake? Did she really do it on purpose? Did she not? We don't know. She's the only one that knows. But anyway, okay, she got charged with that. If it was a mistake, like possibly claimed, okay, she's still charged. She's still going to mm-hmm. go to jail. What about mm-hmm. this guy?
Mm-hmm.
Why does
yeah,
he
well,
get
well,
like funny?
Black privilege.
You could say, well, because he feared for his life. You know, the thing is, they said with her case, emotion shouldn't be involved with that. She should be able to do her job. She has 20-some years experience. Well, the same could go to him. Emotion shouldn't be involved, meaning he shouldn't have been fearful for his life because he's a cop. He should know better or whatever. It's like they pick and choose what? Who's the winners, who's the losers. Who's the sacrificial lamb and who gets to be the poster boy? It's just mm-hmm. really sad.
Oh, it is sad. No, you're absolutely right. But there's two travesties of justice here. The woman basically is guilty of being white. That's why she was prosecuted. That's why she got a second or third degree murder charge. Now, for something to have to be murdered, you have to have intent. And the fact that she was shouting taser, taser, taser means that she really thought she had a taser. You know, in the panic of the moment. Now, is she guilty of negligent homicide? I think so. She pulled a gun instead of her taser. So she's guilty of that. She's guilty of firing, you know, under the arm of her fellow officer in a dangerous situation. And I never understand this incredible need to capture people at the scene anyway. If they know who it is, they know where he lives. I mean, we've got electronics. We've got computers. Go pick them up later. You know, if they escape from a situation, it's better not to chase them. It's better to pick them up when things have calmed down than to have a high-speed chase through the streets. Those kill far more people than letting someone go, as long as they know who it is. Now, if they don't know who it is, that's different. But I imagine with facial recognition and cameras, it wouldn't be too hard to find out who it is. So there's no reason to even tase him. You know, if he's trying to escape, okay, go. We know who your car is. We'll photograph it. We'll get a satellite. We'll get a helicopter. We'll find you. And that's what they should have done. But police get in this kind of adrenaline rush. And, of course, police consider themselves paramilitary now anyway as opposed to civilian police officers. And that's a problem. So that might go to her training. But she's basically guilty of being a white cop who shot a black guy. That's what she's guilty of. In the same way that Lieutenant Michael J. Byrd, who's black, has black privilege, black leftist Marxist privilege, because he's safeguarding, you know, he's part of the insurrection, being Capitol Hill police that let, you know, the Trump supporters walk in. Okay. So he's part of that police department. So they have to protect him to maintain the lie that this was a Trump insurrection when it was reality. It was a deep state insurrection. to stop a constitutional process. So the Trump supporters weren't there to disrupt anything. They were actually there to support what was going on. And this is why this is such a lie. Trump supporters, you know, if they were protesting, you would have seen protest signs. Do you see any, remember any protest signs? No, because they were there for their support. You know, they wanted what was going to happen in Congress. They wanted the challenge to the electors. They wanted the Trump electors to be voted in. That's what the whole thing was all about. That's why they went to the Capitol, to support what Congress is doing. Well, it's kind of hard to call it an insurrection when the people that you're calling the insurrection were the supporters, and the people who you're calling the supporters actually were the insurrection, which is why this is such a crazy cover-up. Anyway, back to our article. Unless you have a comment. Did you have something? Any follow-up on that?
No. It's just sad.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, like I say, we take it with you know, take it as a challenge. It's not over. It's not even close to over. And we know it's not over because they're still taking a poll like this. I mean, the most revealing thing is that they even did this poll, which I find fascinating. So it says Republicans continue to defend the events of January 6th, of course, because we're right, and those who perpetuated the what they're calling attacks on the Capitol, with 80% describing the events as a protest, while the majority, 55% of all respondents of the poll, used the term riot. Well, see, that's the difference. Was it a protest or a riot? Well, neither, actually. It was a support, and it was a deep state operation. And then they say, well, 62% of Republicans said the perpetrators were protesters. More than, see, even the fact they're calling perpetrators, that's prejudice too. They weren't perpetrators. They were citizens, right? This is more than a quarter. 26% deemed the pro-Trump horde, there's another, you know, biased word, patriots, which in fact they were, I believe. While similar numbers, 27% also said they were Antifa. Well, that's true too. They were Antifa. Democrats, meanwhile, nearly equally described them as insurrectionists, because obviously that's what they're told to think, white nationalists and rioters. Well, I mean, do you see all the people that weren't white? In fact, you know, conservative camera folks purposely, you know, interview as many non-white people as possible to show that it's not a white thing, even though they keep trying to push that line. Anyway, white nationalists and rioters, 68%, a mob, 67%, and terrorists, 64%. This is what Democrats think. They think white nationalists, rioters, a mob, and terrorists by around 65%. But that's propaganda, because that's what they've been told to think. Anyway. Oh, here we go. It gets better. Here's another quote for you. Women and people of color are more likely to use negative words such as insurrection and riot to describe the events of January 6th. That's La Raza, which is sort of like La Raza, which is the race, which is a very pro Latino, Hispanic, racist group that wants Aztlan. Hey, Gene, have you ever heard of Aztlan? Does that name sound familiar?
Sorry.
Okay, no problem.
Buttons here.
No, I understand.
I have not heard of it.
Okay. Live radio, folks. This is why we love it, right? So Aztlan is the mythical state that Mexico thinks that, or that radical Hispanic Latino groups think that they can steal back. In other words, Aztlan is California, New Mexico, Arizona. I think that's basically it. Maybe, and probably most of Texas. All right. So they think, and of course, these are the states that were given to the United States in the treaty that ended the Mexican-American War. Okay. So these states became part of the United States by treaty. They weren't stolen, unless you consider the war stolen. But anyway, it was a war that happened. I'm not proud of it. I don't think it's a great thing to do, but it did happen. And these states are U.S. territory by treaty. Okay. But Aztlan says, Oh no, the race. That's what La Raza. So if you ever hear the group La Raza, that's Michael Savage used to say La Raza. That's their goal. Their goal is to restore Aztlan. In other words, turn California, New Mexico, Arizona, and most of Texas back into Mexico. Good luck with that, but that's what they want. Anyway, so if you ever hear Aztlan, that's what Aztlan is their name for what they want for Mexico back, which is kind of interesting. Anyway, so this is as discriminatory as it gets. This guy, La Raja, who's the assistant director of the poll, women and people of color are more likely to use negative words such as insurrection and riot to describe the events of January 6th. Well, you're a woman. Would you use insurrection and riot to describe the events of January 6th? Gene? Back to you, Gene. Oh, Gene's pushing buttons again. Push the one that gets you back on the air. Or I shall continue. I think she's busy. We all have computer glitches at times. Let me see what's going on. Okay, fine. All right. So anybody else? Nope, no one else calling in. I wonder if anybody's on the Skype line. Let me take a look at that real quick. Nope, no one's on the Skype line either. All right, back to the article. So maybe someone's on live chat. That could be too. That's so whenever Jean's not here, she's usually doing something to help me, you know, help the show run. So women and people of color. I already read that. Oh, here's the other part here. La Raja, and that's LaRaja. I imagine he's a man of color, of Latino persuasion, says, meanwhile, older, wealthier conservatives and whites. Yeah. All right. I guess that's me. Well, not wealthier, but certainly older conservatives and white. That would be me, even though I think conservatives are a bunch of wimps. I'm more of a constitutional independent. Anyway, I'm more likely to use the term protest than other groups. Very few Trump voters view the events as anything worse than a protest. Actually, it wasn't even that. And that's the weird part. But it was a support. It was a rally in support of what Congress was doing. See, they all missed this. They don't understand. They don't want to get this guy on the show. Hey, Gene, what do you think my chances of getting Tatish Ndeta on the show are? What do you think? Think he'll have the balls to come on my show?
I really don't think so. Maybe.
Okay. Well, I didn't hide what we do here. I sent him 25 bills to Rock the Nation. I gave him our websites. I said I was a Mass alum. And I said that we don't agree on anything, but you have a nice, friendly, cordial atmosphere with which we can both challenge our information and our beliefs. And I said, if you're up for that discussion, I'd love to have you. And so we'll see if he's going to be a man. He's going to respond as a man would respond and pick up the challenge, pick up the gauntlet and say, yeah, damn it, I'm going to call you. Let's see what you got, you know, white guy. Sorry, I couldn't resist. He might not say that. I might be casting aspersions on his character without evidence. So let's give Tatish Ndeta the benefit of the doubt that he's probably a decent person, even though he believes, I think, very strongly in Marxist principles and critical race theory. But, you know, let's give him the benefit of the doubt and assume that he will think about calling the show, and we'll see what happens. All right. Back to the article. I find this fascinating. Anyway, it says, regarding who should be held responsible for the day's events, well, of course, the first one is Michael J. Byrd for assassinating Ashley Babbitt. That's who's responsible. The Capitol Hill police who let everybody in, they're responsible. Raymond Epps, who the night before said, we have to go into the Capitol as an FBI informant, agent provocateur, he's responsible. Mike Pence is the most responsible because he didn't send the Trump the Brandon electors back, and he didn't allow the Trump electors to go forward. So he's really responsible. That's who's responsible for January 6th, not the Capitol Hill Invitational walk-in Trump supporters who walked in, looked at the Capitol and went, oh, this is interesting, which is pretty much what they did. In fact, if you see the videos, hey, Gene, did you ever see that video? There was a video, they actually set it to ballet music. It was like Strauss's waltz. Da-da-da-da-da, bum-bum. People walking around, you know, pointing at the statues and things. And if you look at the actual videos of people walking through the Capitol, that's pretty much what happened. It's really funny. All right, back to the article. Regarding who should be held responsible for the day's events, I think I already read that. Oh, no, I didn't. A broad majority of Democrats blame Trump, of course, while Republicans continue to blame the Democrat Party by 30%, the Capitol Hill Police, 24%, and Antifa, 20%. All of which show little movement from April's polling results. So we didn't change from a year ago. That's pretty encouraging. Another quote here. As we approach the anniversary of January 6th, which is what the show's all about, okay, Americans continue to point at, they say, former President Trump, who famously told his supporters that morning to, quote, fight like hell, and if you don't fight like hell, you're not going to have a country anymore, as the driving force behind the violence that occurred outside and within the U.S. Capitol. Ndeta says. Okay, so Tatish Ndeta, the first thing I'm going to challenge is why you took that quote out of context. I mean, completely out of context. And so it says, yeah, fight like hell. Fight like hell doesn't mean storm the Capitol. Fight like hell means advocate your positions. Okay, it means go to the Capitol and support the Constitution, support what Congress is doing, you know, to get a proper election result. That's what fight like hell means to Trump. Because he also said, you know, be peaceful, be calm, and all those other things. Now, of course, he conveniently leaves that out, which gives me great insight into Tatish Ndeta and what I think is going to happen if we actually do get to talk on the show. Gene, feel free to stop me anytime. I'm on a roll. Article says, a large plurality of Americans, 44%, blame Donald Trump for the events of January 6th compared to any other person or group. That's from La Raja, who I think is even more racist and Marxist than is Ndeta. At least that's what it looks like from his quotes. He also says only 4% blame Joe Biden. Well, I actually don't blame Joe Biden. And the reason I don't blame Joe Biden is because the man's incoherent. He's got a mental deficiency. He's, on the other side of dementia, I believe. And he has no clue what's going on anyway. I mean, you could ask him what day it is, and he wouldn't know unless somebody told him. So I don't blame Joe Biden. In fact, he's one of the biggest victims here. The problem is he's victimizing the entire country as he's being victimized so that Jill can be in the White House, so that Obama and Hillary can run things from behind the scenes, and so that the globalists can mess up our country. That's the problem. Back to the article. Stunningly, almost 1 in 3 Republican voters blame the Democrat Party for the events of the day. I actually don't blame the Democrat Party. I blame the deep state, which is a combination of Democrats and Republicans that we've talked about earlier. Mike Pence, Mitch McConnell, Chuck Schumer, Nancy Pelosi, Kevin McCarthy, the leaders of both parties, the deep state, plus their willing accomplices in the press, as Rush Limbaugh would say, plus the Capitol Hill and the D.C. police and the FBI and their agent provocateurs. That's who's responsible for January 6th. Make sense, Gene? I'm going to bring her in. I can't believe anybody else wants to call me, feel free. Right now it's just us. And hopefully we'll have Jim here in a little bit. Hopefully I want to get through this article, though. All right, so only 8% of Democrat voters blame the Republican Party. They blame Trump by a wide margin, with 75% saying he is the cause of it all. So it's interesting that the Democrats are all focused on Trump, not the Republicans. So the Republicans have done a really good image distancing themselves from Trump, although it looks like Trump's going to be back running in 2024. And, Gene, here's something I know you're busy, but if you get a chance, I want to get your comment on this at some point to this article. Hillary. We're going to have to take a look at Hillary for next week. Hillary's doing something fascinating. First of all, she said, here's what I would have said if I were president, which is that's a sour grapes thing. But she's actually criticizing, you know, Brandon now. She says that he's not being efficient. He's not governing properly. He's not getting things through. He's not accomplishing anything. I think Hillary is setting herself. Go ahead.
She's setting herself up for running in 24.
Yep. So my contention is we're going to see a Donald Trump-Hillary Clinton rematch. What do you think?
If we do, that would be awesome, because there's no way Hillary's going to win unless it's cheated upon again, because she was a sore loser the last time.
Mm-hmm.
And so I can't see anything positive come of this, put it that way. You know, if she runs, because, and I think there's so many Democrats that don't even like her now. And I think they've seen her true colors. So, bring it on. Just bring it on. Actually, I hope she does get the candidacy, because if it's between her and Biden,
mm-hmm.
Oh, it's no contest. She's going to win it.
Now, what about Kamala Harris? I've heard they talked about, you know, Hillary says she'll be Kamala Harris's vice president. I don't think so.
Oh, but no, Hillary Clinton would never be anybody's second person. No, no, no.
Would Kamala Harris be Hillary's vice president just to stick in the White House and go to parties and do things like that?
Well, the thing is, I think Kamala should just run out of Washington. I mean, she's so incompetent. It's like, I don't even, you know, I mean, I guess she could stay there and go to parties, you know, but otherwise,
her own staff hates her.
Her
own staff is leaving. I mean, I saw some comment that she doesn't even read the briefing materials. I mean, at all. You know, so she's universally condemned by her own people, which I think is hysterical.
Yes, and she's not, how would you say, she is not a good leader. I mean, just based on what's out there, she doesn't lead. She's very degrading. And, I would say either of those two. I mean, there's no way Kamala, I mean, she couldn't even get a couple votes the last time in the primary. Mm-hmm. And her likability is what did they say, 3%? They said Biden's is like 4%. No, I think Hillary's likability, I heard this last night, was less than Kamala's. So Hillary's was the worst, then Kamala's, then Biden, and then Trump. Which I don't even know if Trump's likability is so bad. I think people like to portray it's bad. Because Democrats now that like Trump, that didn't like him before, but they see what's in the office now and how inept they are and how corrupt they are. And just I think Pelosi, Adam Schiff, all these people, Liz Cheney, they all show their true colors. They're not wanting the truth. They're not out for what's the best interest of America. they have their own agenda, their own egos involved, and that's that.
What if Trump picked Joe Manchin for a running mate?
The thing is with that, I would love that. But the thing is, I don't know. I think Trump would probably drive Joe Manchin crazy. So I don't think that would be such a good thing. I think DeSantis in Manchin would be a good thing.
Yeah, that'd be really interesting.
Not so much Trump. And the thing is, this is sad, Greg, but I still believe Trump is going to make it back there before 24.
Well, that'd
be
nice.
I think he's just living in a dream world, but I think so. I really do. I think there's just a lot of stuff going behind the scenes that we may not know about. At least that's what I'm praying. And I may be just living in a bubble in my make-believe world.
Well, here's the thing, though. All it would take is those seven states, the states that you reported on. I've got an article on this, too. It would take those seven states to get their electors to decertify Brandon, and the state legislature said that this is the real vote. We finally audited. We've got this gone through, and here it is. I mean, they could do that without an audit. The state legislatures could change this any time. So the fact that they don't is quite fascinating. But I think with all the contempt of the never-Trumpers in the Republican Party, I think a huge slap in their face would be to have Joe Manchin, who I think is the most independent person in politics today, as Trump's running mate. That would be hysterical. That would so overturn everything that's happening in politics right now. I think it'd be fascinating. Anyway, just got a couple more paragraphs on this, then I'm going to play you something else, and then we'll have some fun for a little bit before Jim joins us. Because I want to talk about the cruise ships. The gruesomes are fascinating. Anyway, so the last little bit here, it says, while 86% of Democrats support continuing law enforcement efforts to investigate and prosecute what they're calling the perpetrators of the Capitol Hill Invitational walk-in, my words, only 29% of Republicans support them. 52% replied that they oppose the efforts, three-quarters of the Republicans who said the nation should move on from investigating the events, while 84% of Democrats say we need to learn more about what happened on January 6th. Overall, women are more supportive of both law enforcement efforts, 61 to 53%, and congressional investigations, 62 to 50%, than men. Oh, that's interesting. Women are more law and order than men? Well, depending on your definition of law and order. If your definition of law and order is supporting the status quo, then yes. But if your definition of law and order is what's, honest and real, then no. Then that's not a good definition. Anyway. Last quote, as we close a year that featured a shocking attack on the U.S. Capitol, more biased language, and persistent baseless claims by the former president, more biased language, and his sycophants, more biased language, that the 2020 presidential election was stolen, we continue to see Republicans and Democrats living in diametrically opposed realities. Well, that's not, you can't have opposed realities. There's reality, and then there's falsity. And this is Alexander Theodoridis, must be Greek. Associate Professor of Political Science at UMass Amherst and Associate Director of the Poll. So we got three people. We got Laraha, we've got Alexander Theodoridis, and we've got, what's his name? Ndeta, Tashta Ndeta. Interesting group. I'd like to get them all on the show. Anyway, there's more to the article, but it goes on. I'm not going to give you the rest of it. You can read it for yourself. It's on my Facebook page. 1 year later, UMass Amherst, you can look it up yourself too. Right from the University of Massachusetts. 1 year later, new UMass Amherst poll finds continued national political division over the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol. I found that fascinating. All right, let's have some fun here. Let me play a couple things, and then what I want to do is get into cruise ships or any other story you want. Like I say, Jim should be joining us hopefully before 8, but if not, he'll get him at his regular time. And I'll be right back. This is Greg Penglis for Strike Force, your source for pure energy. Strike Force is a concentrated energy drink that turns a half liter of your favorite beverage into an energy drink. It contains caffeine, taurine, B vitamins, and potassium. You make your energy drink yourself. Here's how. Add one pack to a standard half-liter water bottle or 16-ounce glass to create a full-power energy drink. No sugar, no calories, no stirring, no shaking. Strike Force energy drinks come in original, grape, lemon, and orange. Each flavor pack is a liquid that adds an explosion of flavor to any beverage. Here's the best part. Action Radio is an affiliate of Strikeforce, so our listeners get a 20% discount. All you do is add our code, WYL, to the discount code window at checkout. That's WYL. WYL comes from our website, Write Your Laws. So, you can get your energy drink, get a 20% discount, and help Action Radio change the relationship of we the people to our government. Not bad. Strikeforce is at StrikeforceEnergy.com. That's StrikeforceEnergy.com. Start your engines. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with a personal recommendation and testimonial for Eric Colley, our new webmaster and marketing guru. Eric has been invaluable in upgrading our website, writeyourlaws.com. To help you with your marketing, Eric Colley offers proven, cost-effective strategies to help small businesses, startups, and nonprofits market themselves on Google Page One. You can gain thousands of followers and be far more competitive, and this is the good part, without paid advertising. Most business owners don't have the time or expertise to excel at marketing. Even fewer have the funds to hire a special employee. And you don't have to. There is a better option. Eric Colley, a consultant who uses leading-edge marketing strategies to increase your profitability at costs which are far more affordable than an advertising or marketing agency. You can be seen high up in Google's Page One. You can dominate Google's local three-pack of businesses next to the search results map. You can increase foot and website traffic. Eric Colley can be reached at 208-999-7510. That's 208-999-7510. His website is besmallbusiness.com. BESMALLBUSINESS. And you can reach him by email at eric@besmallbusiness.com. And that's how you do it. Greg Penglis here for my book, The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction. Everyone at some point in their life wants to learn how to fly. Few try. Even fewer go on to get a license. I believe a major reason for that is how we teach people how to fly. My book is designed to help you navigate the flight training system, but it's so much more than that. It really describes an entirely new way to teach flying. So if you've never tried a lesson or got discouraged in your training and quit for any reason, this book can help you. Don't be a rote pilot who just follows procedures. Be a thinking pilot who makes great decisions, who understands all the reasons why we do what we do. You can incorporate these principles into your own flight training at any time. The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction is featured on the Action Radio with Greg Penglis Facebook page and is available from Amazon.com. Action Radio, part of the ADHD Radio Network, the ultimate free speech zone. We the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed and have the power through juries to nullify the laws by which we do not consent to be governed. At Action Radio, we don't report the news. We are the news. Every other show reports what has happened. We talk about what can happen. From the questions no one has thought to ask, to the answers no one has thought to consider, to the actions no one has dared to take. That is Action Radio. Radio, dedicated to fixing everything. Who says we don't have fun here? Ah, boy. I wonder if the other Block Talk shows, I mean, I haven't listened to many because I'm so busy doing my own, but I wonder if anybody else has all the production stuff we do. I'll tell you, I have to thank Ohlone College. Ohlone College in Fremont, California. Thank you so much to their radio broadcast program at KOHL, where I used to be a college DJ in my mid-50s, broadcasting with a bunch of 18 and 19-year-olds. It was fun. It was a really good time. I learned all this radio production stuff, and that's why I get to do all the things I do, from our rather sarcastic things to something as simple as our hotel bell. That one.
But, you know, Greg, I think you're a good inspiration for people to – You're never too old to do anything. And the reason I say that, when I was in my early 30s, someone told me I was too old and set in my ways to change professions. And that's the meanest, cruelest thing you could tell someone. I don't know. I just think it's crazy. But, it is what it is.
No, thank you very much. I really appreciate that. In fact, it was interesting. I was a little concerned myself, going to a community college, in my mid-50s. I'm thinking to myself, what's going to happen? But you know what? I mean, the students looked at me kind of funny the first day, and they thought I was the professor and said, what are you doing here? You're like old. But by the second class, I was just another student. They accepted me. I accepted them. The professors, who were actually a little younger than me, were similar vintage. They were probably like early 50s, late 40s. It was fascinating. I just became part of the class. And so for anybody that wants to try something new, if you're above ground and breathing, you can change. Grandma Moses didn't paint a picture until her mid-70s. My inspiration is Colonel Sanders. There was a Colonel Sanders, folks. Kentucky Fried Chicken before it became KFC. He retired. He had jobs that he didn't like. He was a railroad, what do they call those folks that take the tickets? And the conductor. He was a conductor in the railroads. He had other jobs he didn't really like. Nothing really fascinated him, and he retired, and then he got bored. He was getting his retirement check, and I think he got something from whatever the railroads plus Social Security, whatever it was, and he got bored. So he said, I don't want to do this anymore. So he started cooking chicken, right? So the guy starts cooking chicken for his friends and family, and then I guess local restaurants wanted his chicken, and then he, I guess, got his own restaurant and kind of went from there. And that's how it happens. And so you're never too old to try something new. And he has a billion-dollar, multi-billion-dollar company by the time he died. Now I think they've screwed around with it. I don't think it never stays as good as the original. Same thing, Disney after Walt Disney won't be the same. Who knows what is going to happen with Action Radio after me? God knows. Hopefully there'll still be, radical, crazy people around to run it. But, you don't know. I mean, but you do what you can and leave the best legacy you can. I think one of the better organizations is Breitbart News, after Andrew Breitbart, has really continued to be cutting-edge news. And so they're doing a great job. I think about Andrew Breitbart and what happened to him, so I don't think that doesn't sit in my mind as we push forward here with Action Radio. You're not too old. If someone told you in your 30s you can't change, maybe they couldn't change. Maybe the person that told you that couldn't change. Because it's like I hear this all the time, Action Radio is a crazy idea. Well, for who? You or me? For me, it's perfectly normal. For you, it might be crazy because you can't do it. But for me, this is normal. This is a very normal thing for me, Greg Penglis, to do. Is to start something completely new. As Jarvik, the guy that invented the artificial heart, said, he said of leaders, I'm not really a leader. Well, at least not yet anyway. But he said that leaders are people with how do you put it? Poorly developed sense of fear and no concept of the odds against them. And I think that's kind of the secret. So if you want to do something crazy, make sure you have a poorly developed sense of fear and no concept of the odds against you. And then you just go ahead because you don't care. And that's a big part of it. All right. I want to read this article on cruise ships because I think it's fascinating. My theory is that because this is an enclosed environment, and because they've mandated that the crew and the passengers all be vaccinated with these, RNA GMO shots that even the creator, Robert Malone, says are a terrible idea now, the people are getting sick on that microcosm, on that isolated environment, on that island that's operating out in the middle of the ocean, and people are still getting COVID, then this really shows up the problems with their so-called vaccines. So this is from Blaze News, and it's Paul Sacca, S-A-C-C-A, December 30th, so yesterday. Or was that today? Wait a minute, what's today? the 31st. Okay, so yesterday. He says, following a major spike in COVID-19 cases on cruises, that's funny enough in itself, following a major spike in COVID-19 cases on cruises, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, yeah, right, announced Thursday that Americans should avoid cruise ships regardless of the vaccination status. Well, wait a minute. Wait a minute. Didn't they just say that that if everybody's vaccinated, it's safe? You know, here's a Rush Limbaugh. But Greg, they said it was safe. You know, in fact, they suspended all the cruises until everybody was vaccinated, and they have vaccine passports. They're doing all the things the government should do, and yet they still have COVID. Gee, what an effing surprise. Anyway, so it says so the CDC also raised the risk level for cruising to the health agency's highest warning level, citing increases in cases on board cruise ships since the identification of the Omicron variant. What they should say is the extremely mild Omicron variant, but they don't say that. They say avoid cruise travel regardless of vaccination status, the CDC warned. Even fully vaccinated travelers may be at risk for getting and spreading COVID-19 variants. Well, wait a minute. Jane, doesn't this go against what we were told? Isn't the purpose of getting vaccinated so that you're not at risk for COVID, so that you can't spread it? Isn't this a direct contradiction and admission that everything the CDC has been saying is total BS? That's what it looks like to me.
Looks back like to it's me too. Well, you just have to go back to what was it, the CDC or whoever changed the guidelines for now how long people have to be out if exposed to COVID. Then mm-hmm. they said because it's pretty much a workplace hardship. And then what does Fauci say? Fauci contradicts that, says something totally different. So it's like you don't know. I mean, nothing. You can believe anybody in government, but right there, the hypocrisy. It's like if people did believe any of them, I don't see how mm-hmm. they could after that. But yeah, the cruise ship, this is another whole perfect example.
Well, and cruise ships is what's funny about it, and I've done a few cruises. This is what I was hoping Shelby will call in. You know I'm going to talk to her about this on Tuesday. But the idea that these things are, they're full of fresh air. You know, even your cabin portholes open. I mean, the ship is incredibly well ventilated. I mean, you've got nothing but fresh ocean air, you know, away from major cities because you're on the ocean, right? It's some of the best air in the world, you know, constantly flowing through. So you're basically outside. Even if you're inside a cruise ship, a lot of times it's like being outside, unless you're way down the decks down below, but that's another story. But even then, they can pipe in fresh air. But you've got an enclosed environment, and you've got a place where it's a controlled environment because supposedly everybody's vaccinated. So how can you have, if you have a closed environment where everybody's vaccinated, there should not be any COVID if the vaccines worked.
Yeah.
So
I agree.
Right? Okay. So if you've got a closed environment and yet you've got COVID, what it proves is everything that the CDC said is a lie. So the only way the CDC can maintain their lie is to close down the cruise ships to tell people that they're dangerous. See, this makes perfect sense. So this is part of the same philosophy of you have to maintain the lie, you know. And of course, the truth is that COVID is a marketing device for the vaccines from the government, health bureaucrat, big pharma industrial complex, big tech. So big health, big government, big tech, big pharma industrial complex. That's just making money off this. And cruise ships prove that it's a lie. That's what I think. Avoid cruise travel regardless of vaccination status. Well, if it's regardless of vaccination status, does that invalidate the vaccine passports? You know what I mean? If the CDC now says that regardless of vaccination status, you shouldn't be going on a cruise ship, yet you had to have a vaccine passport, you had to prove that you had a vaccination to even go on a cruise, doesn't that basically say the vaccine passports are useless? Because they've already banned travel. Well, they're not banning, but they're saying you shouldn't go on cruise ships.
No, to me it makes sense to say that the vaccine is useless.
Well, yeah, but they can't say that because that ruins their marketing plan.
Right.
Yeah, because they're all making money off this. Fauci makes money off his patents and licenses. The universities make money off the grants. Big Pharma makes money off not having to pay for the production, distribution, research, or advertising. And Big Tech makes money because they've invested so heavily in Big Pharma that they're making money off the investments in the stock market. So everybody's making money, regardless of how many people die. You know, that's the crazy part about this. The article goes on. The virus that causes COVID-19 spreads easily between people in close quarters on board ships. And the chance of getting COVID-19 on cruise ships is very high, even if you're fully vaccinated and have received a COVID-19 vaccine booster dose. Well, wait a minute. The CDC just said, you know, that that the vaccines work and that vaccine passports work and that you can't get it in close quarters. This is hysterical.
It just shows they have no clue what they're talking about.
Yeah.
But they're feeding us a line of bull.
I think they know exactly what they're talking about. I think they know exactly what. That's what I think the problem is. All right, we got a call, and unfortunately, Jean's on the phone and can't talk to her person ahead of time, so I think I'm going to have to take a chance. This may be the Skype line. I just checked Skype, and I don't see anything there. Generally, I don't let folks on unless I have an identifiable number, and this is kind of a mystery number. So we're going to take a chance, and caller, you have about 5 seconds to prove you're a decent person. Otherwise, you're gone. I hate to be that blunt, but I just want to warn you ahead of time that that obscene, absurd, otherwise calls don't tend to make it on the show, and this is why I like to... have everybody's number, and I don't generally take calls without a number, but since Jean can talk to you ahead of time, I'm going to take a chance and do that myself, and let's see who you are. Caller, you're on Action Radio. Go ahead. Going once, going twice. Okay, looks like we have a listener. That's fine. I hate doing that. I mean, I really hate doing that. I hate getting calls I don't, we haven't talked to you first, but occasionally, it's wide open radio. Sometimes it works out, sometimes it doesn't. So the person that doesn't have an identifiable number, if you want to call back from an identifiable number, that you caught me in a good mood today. I actually took your call. But that's the best way to do it so that we actually know you are. And then we can go from there. All right, so back to the article here. So the CDC raised the COVID-19 travel health notice to level 4. Why don't they call it DEFCON 4 like they do in the movie War Games? CDC has raised the cruises to DEFCON 4, the highest level. The risk factor, had been at level 3, which is high since August, okay? So it looks like the more people that want to cruise, Shelby's got to be going nuts with this. She's just got to be going crazy. All right, Cruise Lines International Association, that's what Shelby calls CLIA, the leading industry organization, reacted to the CDC increasing the risk level of cruising. Yeah, they said the decision by the CDC to raise the travel level of cruise is particularly perplexing considering that cases identified on cruise ships consistently make up a very slim minority of the total population on board. Well, that's interesting. Far fewer than on land, and the majority of those cases are asymptomatic or mild in nature, posing little to no burden on medical resources on board or on shore. Ooh, that's interesting. So they're so paranoid at the CDC that they're even saying that asymptomatic people that can't transfer the disease, right? Because you can't transfer it without symptoms. That's pretty well known. And the fact that, or people are so mild, they don't even know they have it. That's what's going on in cruise ships. And because of that incredibly minor, at worst inconvenience, they want to keep people off cruise ships. That's how paranoid they are that the message that you can get COVID on a cruise ship in an isolated environment where everybody's vaccinated, that's how dangerous that message is. That's what I think. All right, let me go on here. USA Today reports.
Right.
Go ahead, Jean.
I think you're right. I was going to say, I think you're right.
Yeah. I think this is hysterical. I think this is really funny. USA Today reports between November 30th and December 14, cruise ships operating in U.S. waters reported 162 cases of COVID-19. Wait a minute. Between November 30th and December 14th, that's 2 weeks. And you figure an average, 3,000 passengers on a cruise ship? All right, because they have the net between like 1,000 and 5,000. So I'm just taking a guess. 3,000 people per cruise ship. They had to have a bunch of cruises go on. Let's say there were 50,000 people cruising between November 30th and December 14th. And they had 162 cases? That's a problem? And a case could be asymptomatic and not even amount to anything. I think CLIA's right, that cruise international thing. So they said between December 15th and December 29th, cruise ships sailing in U.S. waters reported 5,013 COVID-19 cases to the CDC. That's 31 times the number of cases reported in the first 2 weeks of December. Wait a minute, that doesn't make sense. So
well,
between
the thing is,
November...
Greg, I was going to say, Greg, then you have to look at how are they testing it, because the testing isn't even accurate. The test kits.
So if it is between November 30th and December 14th, in other words, the first half of December, cruise ships only reported 162 cases, and yet 2 weeks later, from mid-December to the end of December, all of a sudden 5,000 cases come up? 31 times the number? They're screwing with the numbers.
But then how can that be if they're all vaccinated? If they're all vaccinated, there should be hardly none.
Exactly. Yeah. How can you have 5,000 cases over 2 weeks of cruising if everybody's vaccinated? You can't even get on a cruise ship without a vaccination. Proving once again, they don't work, but we know that.
Well, but I want to just change the
yeah, go ahead.
Story. Look at the NFL players. NFL uh-huh. players, how many of the NFLers are vaccinated? And look how many of them have had COVID this year.
Mm-hmm.
So right there it tells you, are the vaccines really working? Why are you putting that poison in your body?
Good question. I don't know. I would say don't do it. In fact, we even have a PSA to not do it. Let me play it for you now, just for folks that haven't heard it. We have a PSA, public service announcement. Ours is a little different than you'll get from the CDC, but we think it makes much more sense. Let me play this for you, and we'll be right back.
This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio. You've all heard those ads for people who have suffered medical or health tragedies, which say you may be entitled to compensation. But if you have suffered injuries or crippling diseases or medical procedures that went horribly wrong, it's not the compensation you need, it's the knowledge you should have had before the condition you suffer from now. So that you are never in that position in the future, I strongly recommend that you do not get any COVID vaccines. Get informed. Do your own research. For 99.97% of Americans, your natural immunity will give you, at worst, only moderate symptoms of COVID. If you've already had COVID, it's virtually impossible to get it again. There are effective cures for COVID, which will get you completely over the virus. There is no cure for the COVID-19 vaccines. Once you start down the road of DNA modification, there is no going back. Joe Biden's dark winter. No freedom, no liberty, no guns, no representation, no oil, no coal, no nuclear power, no space force, no constitution, no family gatherings, no vacations, just taxes, work, misery, masks, lockdowns, and ever more government. This is what will happen if you let Marxists steal the election. This has been a public service announcement of Action Radio, reminding you it's time to get off your butt and save your country.
Yeah, I just thought I'd throw in my Biden Dark Winter piece, just in addition to our PSA. Yeah, I don't think anybody's ever had a PSA saying,
right.
don't take the vaccine. But
you
we
know,
are.
You were, that, the hold on. What you just played about Biden,
uh-huh.
It's supposed to be not a spoof, but, not true. But that's kind of what it's beginning to feel like.
Well, he actually talked about the dark winter. No, I made that before the election. And that's why I said this is what will happen if you let Marxists steal your country. In fact, I actually – that was what I think makes that interesting, is that pretty much everything I said in there is happening. So it was dangerously prophetic in that, unfortunately, I was right. That most of no energy, no oil, no freedom, no representation. That's pretty much what we've got, during the Brandon insurrection. Jim's on the line. I'm going to get to him in just a second here. We're going to talk guns, which will be fun. I just want to finish up this article, see if there's anything else here on cruising. CDC is monitoring 92 cruise ships for COVID-19 outbreaks, which, of course, can't happen because everybody's vaccinated, right? Including Carnival, Celebrity, Disney, Norwegian, Royal Caribbean. CDC has a website where you can check out which ships are being investigated for being in the yellow level of COVID-19 infections, which of course is impossible because everybody's vaccinated, right? I mean, this can't be happening. There's got to be some propaganda here. At least four cruise ships were turned away from ports of call or barred from allowing passengers to disembark in the Americas this week because of COVID-19 cases on board the vessels, according to CNN. But this can't be happening. But Gene, the CDC is watching out for us. Dr. Fascist, he has our best interests at heart. He wouldn't let, this is impossible to believe that cruise ships actually have COVID, right? I hate to keep saying that, but it's true.
Exactly, because everybody's vaccinated.
Exactly. Yeah, this is funny. We're in fantasy land now, folks. All right, so here are the recommendations from the CDC, which I'm now calling the Center for Direct Control. If you travel on a cruise ship, make sure you are fully vaccinated before travel and get a COVID-19 vaccine booster dose if you're eligible. Well, wait a minute. They just said that doesn't matter. You get COVID anyway, or you can. So the
But they all have to be vaccinated anyway. So what is the
right.
point?
So on the one hand, they're saying don't go, but if you do go, get vaccinated. But if you do get vaccinated, it's not going to help you. And you wanted some comedy? Gene, you think we don't? This is hysterical. Oh, it gets better.
You know
better.
What,
this
Greg?
Is
they're losing
what?
All credibility. The minute amount they still had left is gone.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It gets better. Bianchi's on the line now, too. So we're going to – Jim, stand by. I will get to you. Second recommendation from the Center for Direct Control. People who go on a cruise should get tested 1 to 3 days before their trip and 3 to 5 days after their trip, regardless of vaccination status or symptoms. So the disease that you can't get because you got vaccinated, you should test for before you go and test after you go because you even though you couldn't get the disease anyway because you're all vaccinated. That's recommendation two. Recommendation three, along with testing, passengers who are not fully... Wait a minute. Go ahead.
No, I just going to say, oh, boy, what a mess.
I post this on my page. If anybody is Blaze, it's in the Blaze. And here's the third recommendation. Along with testing, passengers who are not fully vaccinated... Wait a minute. Passengers who are not fully vaccinated can't go. But this is a recommendation. Along with testing, passengers who are not fully vaccinated should self-quarantine for a full 5 days after cruise travel. Wait a minute. You couldn't go unless you were fully vaccinated. So people who aren't fully vaccinated, who couldn't be on the cruise, who couldn't get the virus because they have COVID, which they couldn't have because they're fully vaccinated. Gina, have I got that about right?
I'm trying to figure out the logic and the sense of it all. So I think my head is spinning more than it was before.
I haven't even got to the last recommendation. People on cruise ships should wear a mask, which they don't need because they're fully vaccinated for the virus that they can't get, right? Should wear a mask to keep their nose and mouth covered when in shared spaces. Because God knows that on a cruise ship, shared spaces, you know, even though people are a lot further apart than your typical New York subway, where you apparently don't have to, you do. I mean, that's a bad example. I'm going to bring on two people. I'm going to bring on Jim and I'm going to bring on Bianchi. Let's get a quick comment on this, and hopefully Jim can stay a few minutes extra. Jim, what do you think? You want to go cruising for now that the CDC has said you can't go cruising? What do you think?
I laugh at it, and it really doesn't bother me much either way because I have no desire to go on a cruise ship. So.
Oh, but they're fun. All right, Jim, what are you going to do when we have an Action Radio cruise? You're going to have to go. You'll have fun. We're going to have a great time.
I would probably go on that. I can't imagine any other cruise that I would have fun on, but that one I would probably have fun on.
Yes, Vax-Free Cruises. We're waiting for in fact, I'll talk to Shelby about that. Shelby's our cruise and travel expert, and she's on Tuesday. And if we can get a Vax-Free Cruise and get our own little group, you know, no Vax for us. Bianchi, before I get to Jim and the Second Amendment report, what do you think of the CDC absurdity? I mean, could it be any more ridiculous?
Well, first of all, I wish everyone a Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
You, Gene, Jim, thank you for all the hard work you do for the Second Amendment. I really appreciate it. Even though I don't live in your state, but we know.
Oh,
statewide and nationwide, you're on the point.
Yes.
Thanks, Bianchi. I appreciate
Happy
it. Hopefully all the states are working together.
Well, that's the idea.
Yes, sir.
Let's get Jim's theme. I haven't played a theme yet for not since yesterday. I think I missed Jonathan's theme yesterday. So let's get in the mood to talk guns, and this is how we do it.
Out of the forests of Virginia to the swamps of southern Florida comes a great man who carries a big gun, probably a Desert Eagle 50 caliber. He served our nation in the military. He protected the citizenry in law enforcement, and now he is a director of Florida Carry, trying to make the Second Amendment, as written, a reality for all Americans. He is Jim Dyce with the Second Amendment Report for Action Radio.
Okay, now I'm in the... What's going on in gun world, Jim?
Well, first of all, Greg, it's really good to be saying farewell to 2021, or as I like to call it, the year of tyranny.
Oh, wow. Yeah, you and Gene were both sad to see this go. I look at it, we've accomplished an incredible amount with radio. So for me, it was a good year. But
for the country,
it sucks. Yeah.
And it actually ended on a pretty good note for me because I was able to take a teenage son of a friend of mine and shoot him yesterday. And,
oh, wow.
So that that entire day was worth it just to see the huge smile on his face as he kept trying new firearms and getting more and more excited with each one he picked up.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's really cool. Yeah, and that's the thing, too. You know, if we can take a gun phobe, you know, to the range, or just take anybody, you know, I remember when I first looked into it, and I came from a socialist anti-gun family. And so it was very interesting when I got to California and actually, you know, during my married days, you know, we had a murder on our street. And I thought, you know what, I'm going to do the guy thing and learn how to shoot just in case. And what I never expected was how much fun it was. And so here I am taking a lesson for something I thought was a necessary evil at best. And all of a sudden, this whole new world opens up to me. I'm like, wow, not only is this necessary for personal protection, family protection, but, you know, state and national protection. And I understood, you know, and as I'm doing this, but the thing that people forget is it really is a lot of fun. And it's amazingly empowering. And it's an incredible sense of accomplishment to take something like a firearm and be able to put a bullet on a target where you want it to go. And every time you do it, there's a rediscovery that goes on with it. So it's quite fascinating. So you're a young person, male or female? It was a son, right? Son of a friend?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. What was the reaction? I'm curious.
Oh, so he was absolutely enthralled, and he wanted to learn as much as he could in the time that we had. So we were out about 3 hours, spent about an hour on safety and some of the basic uh-huh. fundamentals of shooting a handgun and an right. AR platform, uh-huh. And then walked him through a little bit of engaging targets quickly. When mm-hmm. you're in close, like in a home or something, then went through engaging multiple targets. And then we started where he could shoot and move a little bit. And so he was moving while engaging multiple targets. Then we brought in some barricades so he could move from barricade to barricade and shoot from behind barricades. And like I say, each step, he just got more and more excited and his smile got bigger and bigger. And, He made sure that he took all of his targets when he left.
Mm-hmm. They're on the wall right now, I'm sure.
They are on the wall of his bedroom. He had his dad take a bunch of videos of him while he was out doing that so he could show his friends. And so it was
okay.
It was a great day.
Yeah, sounds wonderful. Do you think you might want to compete at some point? Because it sounds like this is an IDPA candidate, especially shooting from cover and learning how to do more realistic scenarios. That's my favorite of the pistol competitions, IDPA.
Yeah,
although I want to learn cowboy action. Yeah,
and we're already trying to make plans.
Oh, you're breaking up a bit. Oh, I hate that. You're breaking up a bit, Jim. Close some windows.
All right.
Close some of your browser windows. Yeah.
Is this any better?
Yeah, still breaking up a little bit. Jim has the same problem.
Let me call in.
Yeah, okay, that'll work.
Yeah, let me just call in, and I'll do it from my phone.
Okay, that sounds good. Yeah, Jim's got a microphone, and those of us that use the mics, it sometimes is a problem, depending on your computer, your Wi-Fi, enough, you know, juice to get it going. It makes a big difference. Well, I'll get Pianki's reaction to anything so far. What do you think of this young person? You probably taught your grandson how to shoot, didn't you? Or just a guess, Pianki?
Not yet, but it's here coming up shortly, probably.
Okay. Well, that sounds good. Yeah, as soon as
that's good though. What he's doing, I would like to see more of that type of activity going on with the young people, and you know, Eddie Eagle or the NRA mm-hmm. have a young people safety program on how to react when they run across a weapon, and it's very, very enthusiastic, and I think it gets the message across.
Yeah, I taught my daughter basic gun safety, too, and I taught her how to shoot, too. I think you need to do both. And Jim, I'm curious your opinion on this, too. I used to be critical of folks that would, you know, send their kids to ground school for aviation because they'd have all the bookwork, they do all that kind of stuff, and they didn't have any of the fun. They didn't get the lesson. You know, so I said, if you're going to do ground school, at least give your kid a couple lessons. I mean, you don't have to get them all through solo, especially if they're younger, although I was weird. I started lessons at 13. But that was just me. That was a different case. But if you do it without the fun, if all you do is the safety and all you do is the book learning and all you do is the training and you're trying to beat regulations into people, you know, unless you actually get out of the range and have the fun, but then show how the regulations apply, I think you're missing a lot of the experience. They really go together. You can't do the safety training without being at the range because you're missing, you know, where the application part of it. Jim, what do you think?
Yeah, I agree with that, and also with what you said about the fun. So with this young man, what we basically did is on the ride out to the range, I was going over with him the basics of firearm safety and then specific rules that they have for the particular range that we were on, because they have some special rules there because they do allow you to set targets and barricades up wherever you want and move and shoot and draw from holster and shoot. So they have their own safety rules there. But once we got to the range, there was very little of that. Once he understood the basic safety, we just went right into instruction out at the range. And like I said, he got more and more excited the more we shot. And you know, every time I asked him, okay, well, it looks like you've mastered that skill. Do you want to try this? Yes, absolutely.
What a silly question.
Yeah, I mean, if it was up to him, you know, he would have loved if we would have had a live fire shoot house out there that he could have gone through and started clearing rooms.
Do you think this person might be a law enforcement candidate or military possibly? Or is he that kind of person? What do you think?
Well, he could be. His father is in the Air Force and is getting ready to retire. In fact, his father told me that, you know, if his son goes back and tells his mom that he wants to be in the Army now because I took him out doing this, his mom might never speak to me again.
Well, what I would do is give him a flying lesson. That's the next thing. Get him my book, The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction. Get him in airplanes immediately. Talk to Chappie. You know, I don't think he's calling in today, but I think we might have a little extra time. But yeah. And this is why competition is so good. And this is why Chappie's report's so valuable because, you know, so many people go to the range and they just stand there shooting paper, which is completely unrealistic for any kind of defense situation. You know, if you're buying a gun for defense, learn how to use it in defense. Don't learn how to stand there in front of a target, you know, because you're not going to stand there in front of a bad person. You know, somebody's going to kill you. You're not going to stand there, you know, out in the open and calmly take your time and aim and think about what you're going to have for dinner and all that kind of stuff that goes on that people do at the range. You know, you've got split seconds to live or die. And if it's that kind of an emergency, you better be prepared to react accordingly. And the best way I know is realistic competition, you know, and really good training. You know, so and I had a bit of it when I did the house clearing stuff when I was in customs briefly until they hired all the younger agents with the better training. But that's another story. Anyway, yeah, okay, cool. Pianki, Gene, do you have a reaction to this? We got to get Gene out of the range.
That's
one of my projects to get Gene out. We're going to teach Gene how to shoot. Go ahead, Pianki.
Yeah.
I was thinking, go ahead, Gene. I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say, yeah, I would love to learn how to shoot.
Well, we'll get you down here in Pensacola. Or maybe you go down to Southern Florida, go see Jim. We'll get you out there.
That's okay. A guy is asking immigrant to the range and telling him how to shoot for the time that went out. He had experience. He owned the store.
Mm-hmm.
And some guys came in and robbed him and shot him six times. And I think it was six times and some, maybe one. And they pistol whooped his wife. And lo and behold, and the funny thing about it was the guys worked in a barbershop about two store fronts down from him. But no, he really enjoyed it. And it kind of, you know, he'd shoot. Then he'd put the gun down. He'd stand there for about 5 or 10 seconds and watch what he had done. Look at what he was done, like he's kind of transfixed. But all in all, a pretty good experience for him.
Okay, so wait a minute. So
yeah,
he defended himself? He got shot, you're saying? I'm trying to follow the story here. I think something.
Oh, yeah. They came in to rob him. And these two idiots who had a barbershop, a business, two storefronts down from it.
And they tried to rob him? That's crazy. So who got shot?
Yeah, he knew him.
I missed that. Oh, okay.
He got shot. He got shot in the stomach, yeah.
Oh, my God.
When they pistol whooped his wife.
Wow. And then he decided to learn how to shoot after that? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. And he wanted to know how to shoot.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah. I mean, you want to do that beforehand? I mean, prevention's better than cure. But at least, yeah, and that's what happens. Jim, I'm sure you hear these stories, too. People, after something happens to them, then they decide to do something. I tried to do something before something happened.
I agree. You know, to me, it is as sad to me as people who don't buy a fire extinguisher until after they have a kitchen fire.
Yeah. I have an extinguisher sitting right by the stove, by the way. Actually, it's next to the refrigerator. It's not near the stove, but it's right there, right there on the counter. Just for that reason. I want, you know, if something happens, a grease fire, I want to go pick up that thing and go, boom, out. You know, so, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I hope that I never have to use a firearm again, and but I never want to be without it and not be able to.
Yeah. Do you have an extinguisher in your car?
I do have an extinguisher in my car. I did because my old car was small, but now that I have a full-size truck, I have an extinguisher in there. I have a full medical kit in there, so...
Yeah, you're one of those guys.
I would like to be prepared.
I just had a feeling, yeah. So here's a question for you. Why don't cars come with fire extinguishers? I mean, I literally just thought of that as we're talking. You know, of all the safety devices, wouldn't it make sense to have because, you know, airplanes do. They have internal fire extinguishers for their engines. Why wouldn't cars come with one? I mean, I never thought of that. Has anybody ever worked on that?
That would be interesting to do. I guess the problem would be because, you know, you have to keep those serviced. Or replace them. I guess the thought might be that, you know, anyone who wouldn't buy one to put in their car wouldn't replace it when it wasn't serviceable anymore. So
Do with oil changes. You know, I mean, you know, check your fire extinguisher. You know, you change your oil.
Right.
You know, why wouldn't you change your fire extinguisher?
And, don't change their oil either. So.
Well, I know, but that's not our problem. The thing is, I mean, the guidelines are there. We can't stop all stupidity. You know, the only way to do that is take cars away from everybody, and we don't want to do that.
I'm good with encouraging people to have fire extinguishers in their vehicle. I don't like government mandates, so you know, I would hate to have a mandate that you have to. Yeah, yeah,
it would be nice. But nice
I agree, everyone
for,
should have one in their vehicle. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Mine's right on the seat. I can just rip it out and pop the hood if I ever need to use it. First thing, get out of the car. Then you worry about the rest of it. If you can't get to the hood, don't worry about it. At least you're out of the car. You know, that's what insurance is for. Get another one. Okay, gun stuff. Do we have court cases? Do we have laws? Do we have – I know DeSantis wants to sign a carry bill
stuff.
If we get one. Yeah.
Yeah, a little bit of gun stuff since it's been a few weeks since I've been on. The first is my public service announcement. Since Pianki was ahead of the curve and wishing everyone a happy New Year's, our public service announcement for New Year's is – please don't be that guy or girl who at midnight goes out and decides it'll be a good idea to fire a weapon up in the air to celebrate the new year, because every year they do it. Every year somebody gets hit with a stray round. It's ridiculous to do. When the round goes up in the air, it's going to come down somewhere. And before anyone calls in who saw the Mythbusters show that proved that a round fired directly straight up in the air would go up, stop momentarily, and return to Earth and not reach terminal velocity and not be lethal. No one can fire a round straight up in the air. If they could, I would be okay with people shooting a firearm up in the air because it would come down and hit them, and that would just be Darwinism at work. You can never shoot it straight up in the air. It's always going to go at an arc. And it's going to come down, and if someone is there when it lands, it is going to wound them or kill them. So,
never fire a weapon straight up in the air. Not only can you not fire straight up, you can't fire in a completely no-win condition, unless they have one on Mythbusters. Now, I didn't see the Mythbusters show, but I know what they do. And so, you fire a firearm. I mean, how high have they tracked how high a bullet goes? If you fire straight up, like test ranges,
it would be widely variable depending on, you know, the rifle or pistol, what was the caliber, what was the actual round that you fired. You know, everyone is going to be a little bit different.
Ballpark. Let's just say a 45 or a 9mm. Has anybody measured? If something's coming out of a bullet at 1,000, well, 45 is going to be like 850 feet per second. So within a second, right. It's already, you know, a little after a second, it's already be up around 1,000 feet.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, I am sure someone has calculated that, but, you know, even with when you're talking about a 45, there's a wide variation even in the weight of the round, let alone the difference in the powder that's in it. So I'm sure somebody has done it. I have not done that.
Yeah. Point being, these things are ballistically made to go through the air fast. You know, they have conical shapes. It's probably going to rotate in the air back down, you know, with the weight, the way it works. It's going to, it may even spin again. I don't know. But the point is, this is going to be a terminal velocity because acceleration is a squared phenomena. So things accelerate rapidly. And I don't know how fast the bullet has to go before it's lethal, but I don't want to get hit by it. Yeah. They must have cases.
Yeah,
too.
I've seen a case where one came down and it appears the top of a guy's airplane sitting on the tarmac. And yeah, they have that replaced. They put a nice hole in it.
Well, look at hail. Hail destroys airplanes, and it's not going anywhere near as fast or as solid. I mean, the density of ice is less than the density of a lead bullet by quite a bit. And hail completely destroys airplanes, and that's just gravity free fall. You know, so it's very different. It's crazy. Well, I remember I studied this guy named Dr. Fackler. He did wound ballistics, and he would the famous thing was the Stratford goat, the goat test. In other words, they fired ammunition into goats and see how long it would take to kill them. It's pretty disgusting, but it's good information. So, you know, weigh the pros and cons there or not. But have there ever been studies that they actually have cases of people that were hit by gunfire, and how much did the round actually penetrate, you know, the skull and the shoulder, collarbone, things like that? I mean, I hate to get that graphic, but if people understand, this is serious. It might make a difference. Jim, do you have any stats on that?
No, but I do know that there are people wounded and killed every New Year's Eve from rounds fired in the air. And especially in cities, because you see it a fair amount in large cities. And if you're in a city and you shoot up in the air, there's a really good chance it's going to come down where someone is.
Yeah. Fireworks, folks. And use those safely, too.
Right.
whole big difference. Yeah. Well, I wonder if the decline of fireworks, I find it interesting that the things that we use to celebrate our independence, you know, from government oppression, in other words, fireworks, July 4th, we celebrate with fireworks, is the one thing the government wants to take away. They've now made them government fireworks. It's just kind of an interesting twist that they want to control not only our freedom, but our symbols of freedom, our means of celebrating our freedom. They want to control every aspect of it, including our firearms, which is interesting. Okay. Do you have a few extra minutes, or do you have to go at the bottom of the hour? Because I want to see how much time
I am
going
to have to go at the bottom of the hour.
Okay, let's get to the biggest court case or law.
Yeah, so let me get to two quick things, and then we'll see if we have any time left. So the first one, just to prove that I can be intellectually honest and give credit where credit is due, I am going to give credit to an organization that is probably my least favorite federal organization federal government.
The ATF.
So, as nauseous as it makes me, I want to give kudos to the Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms.
I was right. I was right. Oh, that's funny.
So the ATF. Actually, just in the past week, brought online an electronic form 4, which is the form that you are required to file if you have something like a short-barreled rifle or a suppressor that is regulated by the National Firearms Act. And they did this in order to reduce the wait time. So right now, the wait time for an approval for a short barrel rifle or a suppressor is somewhere between 9 and 12 months.
In this age of electronics and computers and instant communication. Right. Okay.
With the new e-form, the ATF's goal is to get that wait period down to 90 days by the end of this coming year, 2022, and down to 30 days by the end of 2023.
Wow.
So
that's like
as
warp
much
speed
as I hate
for government.
The ATF, as much as I hate the ATF, they have done something at least in the right direction for firearms owners.
Oh, good. During the Biden insurrection, which makes it even more incredible.
Right. And so, you know, like I said, as much as I hate the ATF, as much as, you know, I don't want to give them credit for anything,
yeah.
I can give them credit
right.
for
yeah.
business. Yeah.
Yeah. Were they drag kicking and screaming to do it, or is this something they actually wanted to do voluntarily?
It apparently is something that they wanted to and were willing to do voluntarily. So,
it must reduce their workload then. That's the only reason they do it. It must make their lives easier somehow.
Pretty amazing.
Okay. Well, good for them.
So,
should I give the ATF a round of applause, or is that going too far?
Sure. No, go ahead. We'll give them one.
All right. Yeah. Enjoy that ATF. You're probably never going to hear that again.
And so now in the opposite of the ATF and in the category of people who cannot be logically consistent or intellectually honest, and this one's from a couple of weeks ago, we have Governor Gavin Newsom of California, who made comments after the Supreme Court did not put a stay in for the Texas abortion bill, saying that California should draft a bill and develop policy similar to the Texas abortion bill, which would allow private citizens to sue, and this is his quote, anyone who manufactures, distributes, or sells an assault weapon or ghost gun kit or parts in the state of California. And he said that if states can shield their laws from review by federal courts, then California will use that authority to protect lives. So we'll start off
that's
with
intellectually impossible. It's the biggest false equivalency I've ever heard, but I'm not surprised that Gavin Newsom said it. But see if you can make sense of this for everybody who's listening, especially our international folks, is what the hell he's talking about.
So what he is proposing is to allow private citizens to sue in court anyone who is manufacturing, distributing, or selling what he would define as an assault weapon or a ghost gun. A ghost gun is basically a firearm that does not have a serial number. So if you manufacture your own firearm in your own home, and you do not sell it, there is no requirement for you to put a serial number on it. It is required if you ever sell it, you must put a serial number on it. You cannot sell a firearm that doesn't have a serial number on it.
Okay.
So
how can you make your own? Are we talking 3D printing, or you get the lathe out and you carve it out of a block of aluminum, or what?
You could do any of those. You could do 3D printing. You could buy. They have 80% lower receivers, which is basically.
Right.
A block of aluminum cut just in the outline of what a lower receiver would be like, and you would have to lathe out the internal parts of it. So it would take some skill to do that.
Okay.
Or you could build one from scratch. There are any number of ways that you could do it. But, you know, as has always been the case in the U.S., you can build your own firearms. You know, there's nothing that precludes you from doing that. And if you don't sell them to anyone, you don't have to have them serial numbered. Now, everyone talks about ghost guns and how dangerous they are, and we need to keep them out of the hands of criminals. We already have a law that keeps them out of the hands of criminals. It's already illegal to sell a firearm without a serial number at all, let alone to a criminal.
Right.
So making a new law that is only going to stop the person who is building a firearm for himself does nothing to increase safety. All it does is put people in jail who normally wouldn't be in jail because they're not doing anything wrong. And then, you know, the quotes that Newsom put out there, first of all, the hubris is pretty remarkable, even for California, because,
exactly.
You know, you have a state in California that already completely ignores the Second Amendment, already ignores the rulings by the Supreme Court and the federal appellate courts in all of the gun cases and passes whatever anti-gun laws they want. It also ignores the fact that unlike abortion, the right to keep and bear arms is a enumerated fundamental right in the Bill of Rights. So he's making a false equivalency between the two. Now, on the pro side, because there's always a pro side to everything, I actually,
if not, you'll find it.
I would encourage Governor Newsom and the legislature in California, please, please, please do exactly what you said you were going to do. Nothing would make me happier than for the state of California to pass a bill like that, because if they do so, they are absolutely going to force the Supreme Court to take that case.
Yep.
And when the Supreme Court takes that case, it is going to be a resounding defeat for anti-gun people, because a bill as egregious as that bill on a basic fundamental right will cause the Supreme Court to come down harshly and swiftly on all of the anti-gun zealots out there. And that would probably be the best case that we've ever gotten out of the Supreme Court for the Second Amendment. The other great thing is, as it's working its way through the court systems, you want to talk about something that is going to motivate a flip in the federal legislature, that is something that is going to cause it to flip hugely. So, please, if you're listening, Governor Newsom and legislature in California, please do what you said you're going to do.
Yeah. I hate to tell you this, Jim. Gavin Newsom listens to our show, at least not yet. He will, once we get big enough. But I don't think they've quite caught on to it yet. That's part of the reason I'm going to go to CPAC. I want to talk to a whole bunch of media people and say, hey, do you want to be conservative news advocates and stop pretending that there's objective journalism? That's going to be one of my things to do. But as I understand the law, what he's trying to say, and this requires a little intellectual twisting, is that because Texans can, I guess, report on Planned Parenthood abortion facilities, I don't know what you want to call them, Planned Parenthood places, for conducting abortions in conflict with Texas law, that Californians can report or sue gun manufacturer. I guess Texans can sue Planned Parenthood operations that are violating Texas law. And so then you said, well, if they can do that, then we can sue gun manufacturers for violating California law, even though the two have nothing to do with each other. I think that's how it works. Have I got that about right?
That is about right.
Okay.
And there's actually one more thing that he is neglecting that I just thought of, and that is there is already a federal law which precludes anyone from filing a suit against a gun manufacturer or distributor based on crimes committed with a firearm that they legally sold to someone or any other illegal use of a firearm legally sold. So what he's trying to do is already in contradiction to federal law.
Yeah, and you don't have to make something against the law twice, which is a kind of interesting thing too. So all these extra things they're trying to pile on. But the thing is, you can't sue a car manufacturer if somebody drives drunk. You know, you can't sue a construction company if somebody jumps out of a building. You know, this going back to the original person, this whole deep pockets idea. You know, you want to talk about frivolous lawsuits, and that's where a lot of this stuff comes from. They do after guns because they want to stop people from being able to buy guns. They don't want to make guns so expensive that they're trying to limit our right. But the thing is, the Second Amendment is in the Constitution. It's there for a reason, because governments want to take away power from people by their nature. That's what governments do. They want to control people, and the surest way to do that is to disarm them. And the history has proven that. So that's one of the biggest reasons the Second Amendment is specifically there. You know, free speech, free religion, a free press, the ability to share information, not just media, but an actual, printing press in terms of sharing media, including social media, and firearms. Those are the big ones. And then the Constitution goes into your individual rights, especially the rights of the accused. So it makes a whole lot of logical sense. But the idea that you can sue any company for the misuse of a product or the criminal use of a product is absurd. And I don't know where the statute is. I don't know if there's a general statute on that or court, precedence takes effect. But what stops people from suing, stupid lawsuits for, like, if you wanted to sue General Motors because somebody drove them, or that van that SUV up in Waukesha, Wisconsin, that I think Gerald Brooks was the assassin, the terrorist that ran down those people in the parade. You know, could anybody from there sue the manufacturer of that SUV? I would say no. Nothing to do with it. The SUV worked fine. It worked as intended. you know, it was able to start and drive and do the things it's supposed to do.
Yeah, and you have, so in most states there are laws against frivolous lawsuits.
Okay.
The reason that they passed the federal law specific to firearms is state courts were not applying the same standards that they do to all other lawsuits to firearms manufacturers.
Oh, okay.
And
all right. That makes
the
sense.
The federal government stepped in and said, okay, well, now we're going to make a federal law that says that you can't do this.
Hmm. Okay. Makes sense. Do you have time for anything else, or are you going
to
go?
I do not. I'm actually going to have to jump off.
Oh, that's fine.
So I'll wish you and all the listeners a very happy new year, and I will talk to you next Friday.
Sounds good. Thanks, Jim. Always appreciate your reports.
Thank you, Jim. Be careful.
Oh,
thanks,
yeah.
So
give your Florida Carry. How do we get a hold of you real quick?
So you can find Florida Carry on the web at floridacarry.org. You can email me directly at jim@floridacarry.org. So
there
everyone have a wonderful new year.
Sounds good. Thanks, Jim. There we go. So, Pianca, it's you and me. So I'm going to play something here just to kind of what do I want to play now? Something I haven't played for.
Where's Gene? Sneaked off?
Gene had to leave a little bit early. So it's just you and me. So let me play something real quick, and we'll be right back. This is Greg Penglis. So what is Action Radio? It is a radio show with its own citizen legislature. That's you, the listener. It is a fully interactive system of listeners, expert guests, social media, writing bills, legislator input, bill submission, lobbying, and citizen action. Action Radio is the future of talk radio, using all the available technology in one completely integrated new system. Okay, that's enough. Let's get back to chatting. So it's just you and me, dude. First of all, I want to thank you for everything that you've done this year for this show, for the calls, for the insights, for the humor, for the bills that you've written, for just your almost daily contribution to this show. You really are a huge part of Action Radio. I just wanted to thank you and wish you a happy new year.
Oh, that's great. And I'm happy to, what makes me so satisfied when people listen and then they begin to think. And that's something that's not prevalent in society. People seemingly don't think, especially about what they hear, and they know it's outlandish, but they don't give it any consideration and see through it, like what you was reading earlier in those points. It's just ridiculous.
Yeah. I got a bunch of stories for us, too. We can talk about pretty much anything we wanted. But since I got you here, I want to get your expertise on this. There's the UMass poll from my old university. See if I can pull it up here real quickly. I'm guessing the person that runs it for the university, it sounds like a Nigerian name. I just wanted to run it by you and see if that's the case. But there's this radical guy who does the race and politics at UMass. I've already sent him an email. Tatish Nteta. That's Tatishnteta. And black guy running the UMass political thing. He's running this poll that I reported on earlier on the show. Nigerian background? Just curious. Or no? Or do you know?
Well, it sounds like it. I'd have to look at the name to see.
Okay. Anyway, what's on my Facebook page? In Teta's last name. Really, I was just curious because I think the folks that come here, Nigerian folks that come here generally seem to me to, be living the American dream, to go for the prosperity, to go for the economy. Doesn't strike me as a, well, of course, there's all kinds of people, everybody's different, but to have a liberal college professor, I just thought it was interesting. I was just curious as to his background, whether that's, anyway, if you have any insights on that, feel free. Be kind of fun to look into. So anything bugging you these days?
Well,
I've got about 20 minutes left of this year. Go ahead.
I really get kind of disturbed when immigrants come here, then all of a sudden they want to, not all of a sudden, but they want to add some input that's contrary to either conservative thought and maybe even liberal thought. I think trying to change a country that you just arrived at, you've been here for a while, it's just perturbed.
Well,
come here and enjoy.
It used to be that way. when I came to the United States, you had to assimilate. You had to swear that you weren't a member of the Communist Party. Now it's almost, now they don't care. Now the Communist Party's running the country. You had to memorize the Bill of Rights, and I did. And I was able to recite them to my immigration officer when I had my my interview, you know, before I got my citizenship. And this is, you know, I think I had to wait till 21 because I came as a teenager. And so it used to be that you had a lot of criteria that you had to fulfill. You had to learn what the United States was about. And so you had to, you know, freely and willingly without reservation or purpose of evasion, you know, swear allegiance to the United States. So people that come here used to, and I've still got the paperwork. I've still got the judge. I think his name was George McGrath was the judge in Boston who swore me in, you know, when I turned 21. So it meant something to me. It still does. But I don't think it's the same way now. Now you got Brandon wanting to just, you know, give away citizenship to anybody that walks across the border illegally and just wave his magic, you know, wand across a piece of paper, you know, sign it and say, there, by executive decree, I declare these people citizens. And you can't do that. But we've cheapened citizenship so much. It doesn't mean what it used to mean. It doesn't the value of it's there. If everybody's a hyphenated American, if you come here as a Guatemalan American, you know, where's your allegiance? You know, I don't call myself a Canadian American. I call myself an American. Yeah, I was born in Canada. Yeah, I'm always going to have a, you know, a feeling in, for Canada. I want to go back and visit the place and get to know it more. But my citizenship is here. You know, I mean, that was the decision that I made, and I'm sticking to it. Obviously, I haven't left. But if you cheapen the value of citizenship, that's when you start to run into problems. And people who value citizenship, and it's a tough process. It's supposed to be a tough process. That's how you make sure that the people come here do want to assimilate, do want to become Americans. And that's why you'll find immigrants, some of the most loyal Americans out there, because we went through the process. We weren't just born here. It's not just an accident that we became Americans. We had to work for it. That, I think, is the difference.
That's a good point. You're absolutely right. Hmm. And like Barbara Jordan said years ago,
mm-hmm.
immigration is a privilege and not a right. And many yeah. ways I have came to agree upon that you go to another country in order to make it better,
mm-hmm.
not take from it for your own personal use.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's the whole point of this country. You know, in fact, I got stories here. I don't know if I want to start a story or not. There's one here about Brandon bringing in all these folks, flying them across the country. Well, let me see if I can find that one here. I got actually got a couple of them here. Yeah, let's bring this one up. So we've got, this is from National File, and it's by Cullen McHugh, December 29th, so 2 days ago. Biden regime flies illegal immigrants, illegal aliens actually, to Pennsylvania Airport, including twice on Christmas Day. Isn't that special? Jim Gallagher, president of Aviation Technologies, Inc., and the airport's fixed-base operator, confirmed the reports on Monday. The flights originated in Texas, and some of them, well, of course, at the border, probably, and some of them stopped in Cincinnati en route to Wilkes-Barre, Scranton. That would be Pennsylvania. They talk about when they landed. Oh, yeah, first charter flight landed December 11th after it was diverted from a New York airport. Yeah, why was it diverted? See, I think Tower should refuse these planes permission to land. Sorry, you're carrying illegal aliens. We can't let you land. Go somewhere else. Bye. You know, that's what they should do. It says Gallagher observed young people, most of them minors, disembark from the charter planes and get on buses. Now, these charter planes are 737s. These aren't small airplanes, you know. And then here's where it gets interesting. He says he added that he did not know where the buses ended up going. Those would be the Catholic charities, Lutheran charities. Those are the church charities, the NGOs that are the other part of this operation, right? And he says he had no information regarding the status of the passengers. He said, though, the flights were designated as ICE. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, all right, ICE flights. The planes were Boeing 737s that can hold 130 passengers, Wilkes-Barre Scranton International Airport Executive Director Carl Beardsley said. Airport officials did not give exact numbers of passengers on the flights, but estimated the numbers that range from about 95 to 125. Yeah, so they denied it. ICE denies this. This is where it gets interesting. He says, I want to see the manifest. I want to know who was on these flights and where they were going. And that's Teddy Daniels, seeking the GOP nomination in Pennsylvania's 8th Congressional District, which I guess is where Wilkes-Barre Airport is. Daniel spoke with a local resident who filmed the event. He says, if we hear the last gas push on the plane, we wouldn't, you know, have known, you know, because there were no lights. Well, that's interesting. They flew without, I guess they snuck in without lights. Well, that's interesting too. Anyways, this whole secret operation of Brandon flying illegals here. And let me see if I can get the quote from ICE in this article. Yeah, way down here. Oh, yeah. ICE stated that they did not originate the flights. This is, these are not flights, not our flights. And that's ICE spokeswoman Mary Houtman wrote in an email. So they don't even comment officially. Yeah, so what do you think of Brandon flying illegals around the country?
You say the planes were flying without lights at night?
That's what I'm wondering about. I just noticed that. I mean, I read this article earlier, but let's see if I can go back to that part here. Planes for Boeing 737s, 130 passengers. Here we go. This is Daniel spoke with a local. This is the Congress guy who's running for Congress. Daniel spoke with a local resident who filmed the discreet arrival of one of the flights on Christmas Day. She received a tip that the flight was coming in after disapproving airport employees felt compelled to speak out. Quote, if we didn't hear the last gas push on the plane, we wouldn't have even known because there were no lights. And that's what the woman said, identifying herself as Desiree. When they got off the plane, they were using flashlights on the ground. Nothing was lit up. Yeah, apparently. Well, they might have flown with lights. Looks like, and they might have landed with lights, but it looks like after that, they shut down the lights. And they snuck off the plane in the dark of night. Yeah, that's what this is about lights. Interesting, huh?
You know, I'm gasped for words, Greg. I really am. This administration is doing so much wrong, so much evil, and people are quiet.
Well, why do you think they're quiet? What's holding back the American people from taking the mob action that you talked about yesterday? You know, where are the protests? Where's the million person Washington D.C. mall something? You know, I tried to get a concert idea. You know, to have a jailhouse rock concert for the January 6th political prisoners. You know, where's the energy? Where's anything? Are people just sitting around waiting for the midterms, hoping the GOP will save them? Because they won't. You know, why don't we have a million listeners? Why can't we do the things we need to do here at Action Radio to propose legislation that will change all this? You know, why can't we help the people running the audits like Arizona, you know, and the places that want to do it, Wisconsin, Georgia, Pennsylvania, and these other places? Why are there seven states that put Trump electors to the January 6th, you know, electoral count? Why aren't they standing up and saying, look, we put Trump electors in. What's going on here? I mean, the apathy is disgusting. Are people just sitting back and hoping to be saved? Are they hoping Trump will ride in on a white horse and change everything? Because he's only one person. He can't do it. I mean, what the hell are people waiting for?
Well, you're absolutely right. It baffles me to the highest degree. The least thing that I do is talk to my siblings and call my grandsons and tell them this is a teachable moment, so sit down and listen.
Yeah.
But he's just one. Of course, even amongst his peers, I don't think that they are receiving the type of information, instruction, and talks to explain what it is that they're seeing.
Well, like you said, you know, people don't think. You know, and we're not going to be able to change the whole population anyway. I mean, if we're lucky, you got 20% activists and you got 20% Marxists. And you got 60% in the middle that are happily, you know, going to work, doing their family thing, doing barbecues, watching football, you know, having a beer, sitting around. And they're not really involved. And I guess the independents are somewhere in the middle there. So, you know, we had 80 million Trump votes in the last election. God knows how many Brandon votes. But that's still not even half the country. The country's 330 million people. I don't know how many can vote. Let's say 300 million of them can vote. And you'll have 80 million Trump supporters, you know, and maybe so another, let's say another 70 million Brandon votes. So that's still 8 and 7. That's what? 17? No, it's 15,000. That's 15, you know, 150 million people. Well, that's still a lot of people who didn't vote. So they're not even going to take the time to vote. You've got a whole bunch of apathy there. So as we all know, in order to get to freedom, the 20% of us that want it have to drag at least another 20%, you know, or more of the middle, you know, to our side, or maybe like 35% in order to get the freedom so that we have the majority. And that's kind of how it works. And we're not doing enough dragging. The 20% of active people aren't active enough. So we got a problem.
Well, it's a lot of things. Not only the government not being held accountable, people aren't being held accountable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I try to do
the rising, the smash and grab, and and all that kind of foolishness that's going on. That needs to be met with some very hard and tough policing. But where is it?
Well, look where we were 2 years ago. 2 years ago before COVID. So let's take 2019. 2019 was a great year. Trump's in the presidency comfortably. Yeah, they were still doing impeachments and things like that, but I don't think real Trump supporters really cared about that. We had a great economy. Energy was low. We were exporting energy. We were, as I mentioned earlier in the show, you know, China was paying us billions in tariffs. There was no Iran deal. We weren't in the climate change protocols. NATO was paying their fair share. Factories and jobs were springing up all over the place. We were in really good shape. And, of course, that made the globalists and the Marxists miserable. Because when America's happy, they're miserable. You know, they're happy now because everything's being destroyed. Look where we were just 2 short years ago. And look how fast it was able to be taken away. You know, Americans put up with a rogue government that wasn't constitutionally elected, you know, with losing our energy, losing our pipelines, losing most of our rights during COVID. People were willingly not going to church, not going to their job. They didn't rebel in the numbers they should have. Let's say, what if it happened 50 years ago? How about during the 60s? You know, question authority.
Oh, I think it would have been a greater outcry and a greater pushback 50, 60 years ago, coming off the heels of the wars that we have experienced during that period of time.
Mm-hmm. So most of the objection to Vietnam was the draft, the idea that young men were being taken away and forced to fight in a war they didn't believe in, you know, for whatever power-hungry structure there was, you know, don't fight for oil, don't fight for capitalism, don't fight for, you know, Vietnam was not going to send ships and missiles into the United States. They just weren't. They didn't care, you know, and the whole domino theory, well, we've got to prevent them from going communist. Well, what are you going to do? Well, we got to kill the village in order to save it. You know, if we kill everybody in the village, then at least they didn't go communist. Are you insane? That's irrational. And so you look at this war, and people were looking at it going, well, I don't want to fight that. But where these people, you know, if the nation turns communist, A, we can't stop it, and B, we can't, you know, what's going to cost is like you look at Afghanistan. You know, what did it cost to keep the Taliban out of power? Well, trillions of dollars. And what happens as soon as we stop sending trillions of dollars? Well, the Taliban wins. But they're always going to win. The communists in Vietnam were always going to win. Unless the Vietnamese people themselves fought back, which they didn't. They fought us. You know, and they had corrupt leaders in the South and communist leaders in the North. And I don't know which is worse. You know, a corrupt leader or a communist leader. Because either way, you end up with totalitarianism. So I can see why there's apathy, but it's not us. We can't change that.
If these countries get the technology, which can be directed into weaponry of a greater distance and impact, you can believe they're going to attack the U.S. You know, start attacking U.S. installations, then they would just drop a bomb in the middle of New York.
Yeah, Vietnam's not going to do that, but North Korea might. So that's where the danger is. Iran, you know, you look at the insurrection now. The look at Brandon's crew. They're doing everything possible to get a deal started with Iran again. Why are they so hell bent obsessed with having a nuclear deal with Iran of all places? It's like we're arming our enemies and ignoring our friends. Why doesn't Japan have nukes? And South Korea, they need them. How about Saudi Arabia? Wouldn't that be interesting?
Well, Saudi Arabia is buying missiles from China.
Yeah, see, they should be buying them from us.
Well, they're not. Certain missiles with capabilities we don't sell, but China will.
Well, that's interesting. Do you know what kind of missiles? This sounds like a Peter Pryor question. So what kind of missiles is Saudi Arabia buying? I know why there'd be objections here, because they think the Saudis would use them against Israel. But Saudi Arabia is a huge country that's amazingly powerful.
They're probably wanting to protect themselves from Iran.
Exactly. So what would be the problem with having Saudi nukes? And that's exactly who they protect themselves from. So they're trying to give Iran nuclear weapons, and they're the sworn enemy of Israel. They would use them against Israel. Israel would be forced to use their nuclear weapons, which I believe they have. But I can't see Saudi Arabia and Israel ever going to war. Two totally different countries and different attitudes. You know, they're close to each other, obviously. But, I mean, Saudi Arabia is a huge country. If Saudi Arabia declared war on Israel, they would win, except for the nuclear weapons. Because Israel's tiny. But they're not going to do that because it's in their interest to trade with Israel, which is what they're doing. You know, you look at all the Abraham Accords. All these nations are
starting
to work together.
But, you know what the Constitution of Saudi Arabia is? It's the Quran.
That's a problem. But are they following? How closely are they following it?
They give up little bits and pieces. Women can drive now in public.
Well, that's nice. I remember when they couldn't. When I was a tour guide in San Francisco, we get Saudi tourists come in, wealthy Saudis, and I asked women in particular, I'd ask them, "So, what brings you here?" I remember one woman in particular, "I can drive. I'm going to have fun." And it's really interesting. The Saudis, when they one of the jokes is when the Saudi Airlines fly out of Saudi airspace, you know, everybody runs to the restrooms to change, particularly the women. You know, get out of the burqas and the whatever, you know, they have to wear, and they start, you know, wearing Western clothes. So they take off, you know, in Saudi garb, and they land in Western garb. And then when they fly back to Saudi Arabia, you know, an hour or so out before landing, everybody runs to the restroom, changes into their Saudi garb, you know, and that's what they appear in. So it's really funny. So they obviously
don't believe in that stuff. Those are some strict societal countries. Uh-huh. You don't walk around in Egypt with Daisy Duke shorts on. And there has been cases when people, Westerners, have done that, and you know, someone's gotten killed.
Yeah. Well, you got to know where you're going. I mean, it really helps to learn the local customs. Don't think that just because you're American, you can do what Americans do here, there. Any more than what they do there, they could do here. You know.
And
so
then
the
here they come.
Yeah.
Here come the days with these human rights advocates that they want to use under the pretense of human rights to start tearing down the morals of society, no matter what the societies think and say that it should be for that particular society.
Well, I've talked about this before, that I think there's a great replacement going on. It's not the great reset. It's a great replacement. You know, for Americans, there are lockdowns and masks and no education in the schools and substandard education and substandard housing and you know, massive taxes and things like that. Everything and abortion. I mean, everything possible and COVID. So you've got COVID attacking the older folks. You got abortion attacking the babies. You know, you've got and people in the middle of life, everything's being attacked, you know, all over this COVID stuff. So there's a replacement going on. Then you look at the illegal aliens who get money, benefits, transportation, shelter, free health care, probably jobs, you know, from all these different religious charities and the brand and insurrection. So they're trying to replace us, you know, we patriot Americans, we that actually understand the American system and the Constitution and our individual rights, with a compliant peasant class that's just glad to, you know, not have to work and have their life paid for by us, you know, the working Americans. And so the more that they replace Americans with people who don't assimilate, who are here for the benefits and the free stuff, you know, the less strong our country is going to be. I mean, you know, eventually, if there were more illegal aliens here than citizens, we'd be in really tough shape. But you don't need that many. You just need strategically placed ones, you know, in electoral places and have them vote fraudulently. And the conservatives won't
stand
up enough to stop it.
What else would you want for is
what?
They're trying to create a voting block. You know what the Democrats are doing.
Mm-hmm. Everybody knows what the Democrats are doing. That's the crazy part. Everybody knows. You know, it's like everybody knows the boulder's going to roll down the hill and nobody's going to stop it. You know it's going to go, you know, but no one wants to stop
it. Well, just step to the side and let it roll on out to the sea.
Oh, that'd be nice. Yeah, that'd be the good way. Well, and here's something, too. We can and I'll be talking hopefully to Trump or you know, the Republican Congress, assuming that they get in, about, you know, you can actually get rid of all the illegal aliens in this country fairly simply. And I just got my 90-second warning. You know, you take the ITIN number. We've talked about this before, the individual tax identification number, which is given to illegal aliens to allow them to pay taxes under the pretense that they can actually stay here. And you reverse that and you use that to seize all their assets. you know, if you see the essence.
Well, they
have
changed it. I think they changed their rule where they're not permanent any longer. I think they expire at the period of time.
Oh, then you get a Social Security number?
Well, I don't know.
I don't either. But anyway,
I think that the people who can't get a Social Security number was given an IT, and they didn't qualify for a Social Security number. Social Security number, you have to be here legally to get that.
Exactly. Well, unless it's a fraudulent one. So if you start checking Social Security numbers, if you start checking people that have a gap that all of a sudden showed up here at a certain age and there's no record of them before that, you know, see, with me, even though I came from two different countries, from Canada and Australia, there's a record of where I was. I mean, the federal government knows where I was and where I started from, so they can trace my whole life. You know, so I can prove that I'm a lawful, naturalized U.S. citizen. But there's a lot of people where there's going to be a gap when they showed up illegally, you know, and then started paying taxes down the way or whatever. So it wouldn't be too hard to do some computer stuff to find out who's here illegally and then take all their stuff, make it impossible for them to live here. So we could solve the illegal alien problem by anybody who's willing to do it, by simply taking all their stuff and saying, "Whoop, sorry, you know, time for you to go home. Anytime you come here, we're going to take all your stuff." That's what it would take.
I agree.
You wouldn't have to round up. Round up a single person. Yeah. Well, I'll be talking to Trump about that when I can. Anyway, we're done for this year. Thank you, Bianchi. Let's do it again Monday, and we'll start again with another year.
Happy New Year to you, Greg. I really appreciate your dedication and your steadfastness.
Well, thank you. I can't help it. I just believe in what I'm doing. Once you believe in what you're doing, the rest is easy. But to everybody,
I know it's got to be like tying up shoes for you. Thank you very much.
Oh, no, listen, believe me, it's my pleasure. I mean, I enjoy this. That's why I do it. I like the challenge. I love being able to do something, and I love the idea that maybe I can make a contribution that forever changes the relationship of the citizen to the government, and that will last, you know, and that people will follow on in this, and we start deciding the laws that we want by submitting those laws to government instead of having them dictate the laws.
Absolutely.
That's what I'm trying to do. All right, there you go. Action Radio is at blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. Our website for our bills is at www.writeyourlaws.com. We have a Skype line if you want to call in internationally. We have a live chat line. You can type in stuff. If you want to contribute to Action Radio, you can go to paypal.me, that's /Action Radio. And all our sponsors too, you know, especially Strike Force Energy, use code WYL. Get yourself a 20% discount, and some of that helps us out too. Let's do it again next year and see what kind of progress we can make then.